Welcome to Staple Live, oneofus.net, appearing at the Independent Media Expo, day two, March 2nd, and boy, are we feeling great. Right, Brian?
I feel so good right now. We're trucking along. Everybody's healthy.
Wait, hold on. Who are you?
I'm Brian.
You don't sound like Brian.
No.
You sound like Batman.
I am the knight. No, it's something about podcasting for...
You know, they
for
told
6
me,
hours yesterday.
They told me Kevin Conroy was going to be here today. Who are you?
Yeah, my voice is a little fucked up. It's a little on the sour side, but I'm here. I'm a trooper.
Yeah, we made it back. We got the bowl of candy. We've got 3 pieces of beautiful artwork that from one of our art contributors, Zach Martin.
Yeah.
Beautiful pieces from Wizard of Oz, just gorgeous.
Yeah.
That we're giving away to people who will, it'll be too late by the time you hear it, but what else, whatever the hell.
I made the same mistake yesterday. I started to explain how you could win the giveaway, and then I was like, oh wait, none of you listening to this were at Staple.
Oops.
You can't win. Or even if you were, by the time you hear this, we'll have already given it away.
And if we did see you and you won it, congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
Yeah. We're talking to you from the past.
Wow.
It's like time travel.
We have achieved time travel. That's pretty incredible.
Of a sort.
It wasn't even that hard.
Wasn't that difficult. Hi, JC.
Hello.
JC's here, too.
Yeah. I was just sitting here. Who knew? Must have been the bagels that Courtney brought us.
Yeah, that was very kind.
Time travel bagels!
You know what? We have very supportive significant others because Courtney brought bagels and my wife pointed out the egregious error on our giveaway sign from yesterday, fixed it, and then brought me the new sign. She was like, did you realize you had this information wrong? And I was like, nope.
This is generally why we have women in our lives as significant others altogether.
Because we're fucking morons.
Stupid.
Yeah. I mean, that's the long and the short of it.
Well, incidentally, I am single, so any ladies listening.
JC is not a moron.
JC needs some corrective action, is what you say.
Corrective action? What are you, a general on the battlefield? I have to take corrective action.
I may have been playing too much Command and Conquer this weekend.
At my signal, unleash cuddles.
Live at Staple, not live, but you know, well, I'm alive.
You are alive.
Barely at Staple 2014, talking with our old friend, Tim Doyle. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm good, Chris. I'm very good.
Tim is an accomplished artist, a well-known poster artist around town and other parts, as well as a well-known acerbic wit.
That's a nice way of saying I'm a huge dick on the internet.
Yeah, but you're my kind of dick. So
we made an entire career out of being dicks on the internet.
I love that a weird place.
You always post the stuff that I wish I had the balls to actually come out and say.
I'm in the weird position of not caring what any of my friends or family think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't have to play nice. And then they still love me, so it's fine. Oh, my God.
So your post art tends to represent a lot of iconic but not, let's see, how's the best word, like scenes from famous things that aren't immediately recognizable until you're looking at them. And then you're like, oh my God, like you make very realistic looking versions of things that weren't realistic in the beginning.
Sure.
Like, we have 2 prints of you on the wall of Sesame Street that
took
a second to figure out what it is.
Yeah, like, those are really cool.
You have both halves of that Sesame
Street.
Yeah,
we have them right at.
That's one of the favorite things I've ever done, just because doing all the research on that was a lot of fun. Yeah, I like to do art that kind of, it's pop culture art, but it creeps up on you, and just like, if you're looking at it, you might not immediately recognize it, and then the more you think about it, you're like, oh, wait, that's the thing from the thing, and yeah.
I know what that is.
It's a nice little hook, because it rewards the audience for being a nerd. You know, like, you could just do, and I've done it, I mean, you know, just do a drawing of Bill Murray, and people are like, oh, Bill Murray, I saw that movie, I like his face. But, you know, if you do a drawing of a gas station with a nuclear power plant in the back, and it takes you a second to realize you're looking at the Quickie Mart from Springfield.
Right.
You're like, oh, okay, and then they can feel clever that they recognize something, and then they give me money for it.
Yeah, you did a lot of Wes Anderson ones I really liked a lot.
Yeah, you know, every year I participate in the Bad Dads art show at Spoke Art, which is a Wes Anderson-themed art show in San Francisco. It happens every October 31st and runs through the month of November. And so I get to visit his films and locations quite often. It's a lot of fun.
That you get to actually visit the film sets?
No, I mean visit with my. Oh, okay. I let my fingers do the walking.
Okay, fair enough. I was like, wait,
with, what? With the drawing.
How do I get in on this?
No. Visit in the loosest sense of the term.
I want to be precious and sound smarter than I am.
There you go.
I've been telling you need to work on that.
A lot of work. You know, you actually, one of your big pieces to get you really kind of thrust into the spotlight was your, of course, Transformer change into a truck.
Yeah, that thing broke my career pretty wide. I mean, I'd done some prints before that for the Alamo Drafthouse back when I used to run Mondo. I ran Mondo for 4 years, kind of learned everything I needed to about the poster industry to leave and do it all by myself, which was fantastic. And I've been doing that now for 5 years, working for myself.
Nakatomi Inc.?
What's that? Yeah, I'm sorry, Nakatomi Incorporated. Thank you for promoting me. NakatomiInc.com. And, it's been a crazy ride. You know, when I started it, me and my girlfriend at the time were just living together, and we're like, all right, let's make this work. Maybe we can make money at it. And then by the end of that first year, we were married, had a kid, had a successful business, and now, you know, that kid's 4 years old. I have another kid. I have 3 full-time employees. I got a warehouse space and production facilities. And
you never would have pictured this, like,
yeah,
just a few years
ago. I had no idea. I just wanted to stay in my bedroom and never put on pants and just draw funny shit.
That's where we're coming from, except we just want to talk into a mic. And from
gotcha.
Well, and when we tried to get away with not wearing pants yesterday,
it didn't
threw
go
a big
over.
Fit.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Pants
Prudes.
Are overrated.
I was wearing Batman underwear. I don't see what the problem was.
It's cosplay. Hairy leg cosplay.
I love that you backed off saying underoos. Like, that was going to be somehow more weird than what you actually said.
If I could find actual new underoos in my size, I would, in fact, buy them.
Who wouldn't?
I'm sure they're made out there. There's a fetish for everything, Chris.
I would assume you could probably find a table at this convention selling them.
No, I have looked already.
Oh, okay.
That was the first thing. I always scan for that first.
That is too bad. One thing I really enjoy about the work that you do and the work of Mondo is that it seems like as we have evolved as geeks, the artwork has evolved. Because it used to be, you know, in our dorm rooms, we would tack up, like, slightly ripped, reprinted one-sheets of... you know, the movies that we loved, and now it's like there is a whole industry built around creative expressions of this fandom. And,
yeah,
and the stuff that's on the walls is legitimate works of art and not just a, you know, not just another poster from a movie that we've put up.
It's still, I mean, there's a fine line. I mean, a lot of what Mondo does is advertising for studios that they come to them and say, hey, make this poster for us because you're the bee's knees and it's going to help us promote it. So you kind of got to watch out that you're still being sold to. A lot of the stuff I do is, like, I like this thing, I want to draw a picture of it, or, you know, stuff like that. And so it's there's a fine line there.
Sure.
Between, like, gallery work and merchandise. And it's, you know, I've walked, I'm a day walker, I've been on both sides of it. You know, I've done license work, and I've done what I would consider more purely art stuff. But yeah, it's an interesting, much deeper discussion to be had in there. But yeah, no, it is it's nice to see that more and more people are recognizing that what comes out of the movie studios as far as their poster campaigns is genuinely so middle of the road. And I understand why. I mean, the movies are so expensive to make, and they have to please as many people as possible.
Right.
And that's how you get somebody going in to see Drive thinking it's going to be Fast and Furious.
Yeah,
you know?
That's unfortunate.
Right, it's because, like, they're selling it the most broadest way possible. And they show up and like, oh wait, what am I watching?
And the whole art of movie poster art, as far as theatrical lobby posters, has really taken a nosedive.
Yeah,
it's gone from like illustration to beautiful photography to just plain. I could have photoshopped that.
Yeah, but I mean, studios do that though because it works, and that's the sad thing. They test market that stuff. You don't spend $150 million on a movie and then another $75 million promoting it without analyzing that with test focus groups, you know, and that's the thing that sucks is that people like us who want nice images to look at and, you know, well, you know, like illustration and stuff, we're the minority.
Yeah, we're not the people who are crowding into theaters to see Transformers 4.
And it was fun when I was running Mondo's to carve out that niche of like, look, we can make good stuff for our swiftly diminishing group of people who like things drawn by hand.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something I continue to do.
Well, it's gotten to the point now that, like, this type of art, though, is a thing that people frame and put up proudly in their houses.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
In some ways, it being sidelined has done nothing but call more attention to it as art as opposed to just fandom, you know?
Yeah, no, it's very nice. And it's interesting seeing the scene grow up around the work I did, you know, whatever, gosh, 8 years ago now, which is terrifying, 9 years ago. Yeah, it's a weird movement. I wonder how long it'll last. You know, I mean, I worked in comic book stores, baseball card stores, when I was a kid, from the time I was 16 till I moved to Austin when I was like 21. And, you know, I saw Pokemon cards and, you know, O.J. Simpson cards and, you know, Beanie Babies, and everybody's like, oh, I'm going to buy this and save this and it's going to be worth money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, nope, none of it is, you know? And so people are like, oh, I'm buying this art, it's going to be worth money. Like, no, just buy it to enjoy it.
Yeah.
If it's worth any money, that's a bonus, but don't do this as opposed to saving for your retirement.
Yeah. You
know? Like, I'll never forget, I was maybe like 18 or so. I was at the comic book store by myself, and this guy came in, and he bought a $2,000 Beanie Baby for his daughter.
Oh, my God.
Because it was Humphrey the Camel. It was the last one he needed. He's like, yep, that's the last one she needs for her collection.
It wasn't a Fabergé egg with googly eyes?
No, it was a fucking sock filled with plastic pellets.
And now it's probably worth $1.50.
If he's lucky.
It's worth $2,001.
Well, and worth in value, it's just what you can get for it.
That's
know?
True, like, exactly.
Artificially inflated markets, that's like the, you know, the poster child for the Beanie.
So to speak.
Right. Poster child, exactly. Yeah, but you know, I have people buying a full case of Turok number 1 from Valiant because it's got a chromium cover. This is gonna be worth money. I'm like, no, it will not.
Because it'll still be Turok.
And I see a lot of people. It's interesting. I try to cater to like normal people who just want cool art for $30 a shot.
Yeah.
You know, like I'd rather make thousands of those people happy as opposed to a couple hundred real intense collectors.
I remember you telling me at one point somebody got really upset because they just assumed something they had bought from you was a limited run print. It's like, I never said that this was a limited print. I'm not going to stop printing them.
Yeah, if I make an image and I do a printing of it and it sells out, I'll make a new edition. And it'll clearly say second edition or third edition or whatever. But, and people, the small narrow band of collectors will get really upset sometimes. And they don't realize I'm not playing their game. You know, like, I'm not here to please investment collectors. I'm here to sell as much art as possible to as many people as possible who want good art. And that's how I pay my bills. And, you know, my employees, I pay health insurance for my employees. You know, that comes out of my business's pocket. So
sure.
We have real overhead. And these guys are just upset that their $25 piece of paper isn't worth what they thought it would be. But it's worth whatever you can get for it
exactly.
At any point. So, yeah, like, I don't want to make collectibles. I want to make art for the masses. If it becomes collectible, hey, awesome. And then quite a few of my pieces do become collectible, quote-unquote collectible, you know, on the secondary market. So, you know, so be it. But that's not my primary goal.
And besides, some vaccine, anti-vaccine, homeopathic-loving, fundamentalist religious type could kill you tomorrow, and then those prints will be worth a fortune.
Oh, man, you've been following my Facebook. Yeah, and it's because I've seen...
The word is stalking, by the way.
Right. I've seen the bubble burst too many times on collectible markets. Like, when comics stopped making story and art and started making collectibles, it worked for a little bit until it didn't, and the industry has never recovered. Baseball cards are never really coming back to where they were. People treating something like Beanie Babies as a collectible as opposed to a toy for their children drove that market up, and then it popped, and everybody realized, oh shit, what am I doing with all these fucking stuffed animals? You know?
It seems like in comics as well, any collectibility of something, there's really no way to tell in advance whether something's really going to go up in value or
not. Well,
not
just that, it's ancillary to something can become collectible, but that should not be the business model.
Yeah. Right.
Because you're essentially lying to your customers, like, oh, buy this, this is going to be worth money.
Yeah. Well, that was the whole Marvel DC practice for like a decade or so.
Yeah.
All those, like, you know, comes with a foil card, and now DC's doing it again. Did you see that? They've got 3D covers on the way for stuff. You're like,
first issue collector's item classic, I believe, is on the cover of Cage number 1 from 1993 with a pearlescent cover, and I bet you I could get that first issue collector's item classic for 50 cents.
Yeah. You know? Almost, I can't even think of a single one of those books from that era that is worth anything now.
Yeah.
Maybe the first black and silver Todd McFarlane variant on Spider-Man.
Yeah, the poly bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. Get that for like $5 now.
Yeah.
And like, but that's the thing, like, it never should have been market it as a collectible or as an investment. It should have been like, hey, check out this badass art with this totally middle-of-the-road Spider-Man story.
You know what goes up in value? Little indie books from creators who years later end up huge.
I was buying Acme Novelty Library because I was like, this shit's amazing. This Chris Ware guy, he's going places. And now those books are, quote-unquote, worth hundreds of dollars because they were super small runs from the mid-90s. Nobody's paying attention to them.
Well, you know, but it goes back to your point. Like, if you're just collecting comics because you're hoping it's an investment, I don't really have much sympathy for you when it's not.
Yeah.
It's like, you should collect comics because you like comics.
Right.
What a novel idea.
It's like, the content is what matters for me. It's like, was I entertained? You know, I don't buy a DVD being like, oh, I'm going to squirrel this away and sell it in a few years. Like, no, they're not going to be DVD players in a decade. Like, it's not going to exist. It's just, I want this consumable entertainment.
Yeah.
And I view these art prints as consumable entertainment. You get it, you like it, and someday you pass it on, or you put it in a file and forget about it. Whatever. But it's a reasonably priced, handmade piece of art, signed and numbered by the artist, for $30 about.
Yeah.
Like, that is cool. You know, but I got the guy who made this, he made it. Like, check it out, this is cool art. Anything other than that is madness. <You know?
laughs> What's your favorite piece that you yourself have done?
Wow, it's The Canals of Midtown.
What was that again?
It's called The Canals of Midtown.
Uh-huh.
It's I did it for an art show in Chicago in December, and it'll be up on my website probably later this month. But it's a 20 by 30. It's part of my Sea Also Rises series.
Okay.
I could say it's my commentary on global warming, but it involves giant crabs and squids. And,
that works.
It's your Bert I. Gordon approach to global warming.
There you go. Yeah, it's like a cat stealing an El Camino. But this print, it's kind of like a quiet scene of like a ruined city, kind of like New York. It's been flooded, and I just get to draw all the broken, decrepit, like, just, I like broken shit. You know, like like I would much rather look at a rusty, falling down barn than a fully functioning farm. You know what I mean? And like, while that's probably not good for the economy, I like, there's beauty in that destruction.
Well, that's part of what I like about your work so much, is that you'll do these, you know, like you were saying earlier, like the Simpsons Quickie Mart, but it's not, doesn't look like the Simpsons Quickie Mart in terms of like the way it's drawn on the show. It looks like, hey, this is a real kind of, you know, crappy-looking convenience store with everything you'd expect.
Springfield would be a terrible town to live in.
Oh, it's all really. They tell you all the time what a bad town.
That tire fire's been going for about 25 years now.
We just don't know how to put it out.
Right, right.
Who's your own favorite artist?
My own favorite artist? I mean, I'm such a comic book guy. Jeff Darrow, Paul Pope, Mobius, which is funny because they all kind of come from the same school of thought. Darrow did some work with Mobius. Those guys have been so influential to me. I just got really into this Japanese printmaker, Yoshida. It's like the whole family's been like a Japanese artist family. But his prints from woodblock prints from about the 1920s or so, they're just beautiful, beautiful work. Really influenced kind of my color choices when I do silk screening.
Wow. I think I know who you're talking about with that Japanese artist, too. I think I saw a thing.
I hope I'm getting his name right. I think it's Hiroshi Yoshida.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw a whole gallery thing online of him and went, wow.
Yeah.
One last question. Have you ever worked actually on a comic book?
Yeah, so I drew The Intergalactic Nemesis.
Right.
Which is a touring stage play where they have the artwork. The play is essentially put on like an old radio serial where there's three actors, sound effects guy, and a keyboardist doing like the music and
the interstitial music. Yeah.
So it's like they put on a little performance, and like it would be great for the radio.
Yeah.
And it is great for the radio, but it's not great for the stage because it's not a visual component. So
we've actually had Jason Newlander on the show, the old show, Leog, about 7 or 8 times.
Yeah, he is very awesome. Promotions heavy guy.
Yeah.
So he approached me because I had painted theater backdrops for the plays before. He's like, "Would you like to do a comic book on this?" I was like, yeah, so we started working on the comic, and then he's like, hey, why don't we project the panels on the screen behind the players, and it was great, because they got to cut out a lot of exposition, because we can now show it as opposed to tell it, so the play got shorter, and it got more visually engaging, and so I did that. It was essentially doing 7, almost 8 issues of a comic, because a couple of them were oversized issues as far as page count. And I did that, and then I realized I never wanted to work in comics.
No, yeah.
Because it is seriously 12, 13, 14 hours a day sitting and drawing.
Yeah.
And And this guy's much better and more detailed than me doing comics work, and they have to be spending 16 hours a day. Like, my good friend Dave Marquez, I mean, I was like, you know, he started putting on weight, and, like, he's losing his tan, you know, like, what's going on, man? He's like, Ultimate Spider-Man is happening to me.
Yeah. So your back is going out.
Yeah, yeah. My friend Christian Donaldson, he's got, like, a nerve disorder in his arm, you know. There's all these, like, doing comics will kick your ass because you're sitting in a chair the majority of your life. And I have children that I want to play with. And, you know, I'm trying to lose weight, and there's all this stuff going on, so it's like, yeah, I love comics. I love reading comics. And if I'm going to do comics, it's going to be something that I really want to do completely by myself, because I don't want to take that much of my life away from myself to draw somebody else's story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But would you ever do your own?
I did an issue of something called Bad... excuse me, your bagel's choking me. I did an issue of something called Bad Cat Comics a couple years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago. It was a 16-page short story. It's a lot of fun. I loved it. I'd like to go back to doing that again. The problem is I'm so booked up with poster gigs right now. Although, you know what? I should say, I was talking to my friend Donnie Cates, who's a comic book writer, lives here in town. He's done stuff for Dark Horse. He's kind of got a lot of books coming up. We want to co-write this book called Captain Punchface.
I like it already.
And do like a 48-page one-shot, like Officer Down, if you remember that from Image.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, Chris Burnham's. It's one of Chris Burnham's first work. Just do that, which is like 48-page, one-shot, insanity. Just draw the crazy shit we want to draw. We're not trying to tell an epic. Just trying to, like, have fun with comics. Because I love fun comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of my favorite running books for a while has been Invincible by Kirkman.
Yeah, how great is that book?
Because it's just, it's fun. It knows how to, if it's a superhero book, it's for adults, and it just knows how to never let you get bored for a second. You know?
And if you look at that book and Walking Dead, the artists are great, but they're not killing themselves. And they tell the story, they tell it well, and clearly, you know who all the characters are, it's drawn well, but they're not murdering themselves to make it look perfect.
Right.
And I think that's how comic books should be treated.
Yeah.
You know, like, just tell the story, get it out there. Like, Jack Kirby didn't fucking, he could do 2-3 pages a day, and this stuff looked great, and they tell the story very clearly.
Yeah.
And, you know, now the industry standard is so, like, overly rendered. You look at anything New 52, DC stuff, like, it's all this, like, really overwrought house style stuff that just kills me.
I tend to agree with you on that. I find that style actually getting a little bit boring.
Yeah.
Whereas I prefer reading something like Criminal that has like this gorgeous, more impressionistic, sort of very darks and you know, all tones is really the focus on that, you know.
Like Sean Phillips and Michael Lark, like that school where it's just like a lot of great shadow form that is a suggestion of the character. But, you know, I don't need to see every fold and rivet and stitching.
I mean, they're making movies of superheroes now where you can see every fold. Our comics can stand to be a little bit more artistic.
Right. I want to see a drawing look like a drawing.
Yeah.
I don't need to see it look like a polished product. Because I like that. Like, you look at Paul Pope, you know, he'll pencil all his forms, make sense and everything, but he'll attack that page with his brush in the most, like, wildly expressive way. And it's great. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, there are those people who do intensely detailed stuff that I love, but it's not what I'd call, like, hyper-realism, like Charles Vess or something like that.
Right, Charles Vess has got a real lyrical look. And, you know, the guy's not grinding a monthly comic. Like, I love Jeff Darrow.
Yeah.
The guy's not grinding a monthly comic, because that would be insane.
With his style, I don't think he could grind out a monthly
comic. Yeah, and he shouldn't. You know, and, like, if he wants to take a year on a 40-page book, knock yourself out, buddy, and it looks amazing. And that's... He probably enjoys his life a lot
more.
He's
the Where's Waldo of violence, is the what I always look at.
Yes, he is. My comic book shop when I was a kid, maybe like 11 or 12, sold me Hard Boiled number 1. And they should not have sold me that book.
Not when you were a kid.
No, probably not. No.
But
a little brutal.
Yeah, yeah. But it cracked my mind open wide. In the same way RoboCop did a couple years earlier when I saw it in the theater when I was 10. Which, again...
Which should, is another thing that shouldn't have happened.
My father was like, don't tell your mom. but I was like, oh, yeah, so much blood, it's amazing.
Well, all that being said, while that generally speaking, this is true, a kid should not have access to those things, now you own your own company, you're living the kid geek dream.
You were arguably very well adjusted.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the Batman story. Some kid's parents get murdered in front of him, he's going to grow up to be a fuck-up, generally. But that one guy
is Batman.
Dresses up as a bat, you know. Yeah.
Are you saying you're Batman?
I'm saying... Batman,
I can't believe
nerd
we tricked
art.
Batman into admitting who
I know.
He was.
Yeah.
You got me.
Scoop.
Oh, man.
One last question before we go. I was going to say...
You
what's
said
your,
that about the last
I
question.
I know. Well, I was going to say, what's your favorite TV show right now, but I already know it's True Detective.
It is True Detective right now. As long as they don't screw the ending up, it is going to go down in history as one of the best things I've ever seen.
So nervous about the ending.
I have faith.
Yeah.
You know, and even if the ending... If they pull a Lost and fuck it up.
it was all sort of a dream, sort of, kind of. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, it was still a really good ride.
Yeah.
So we got 2 weeks left. I mean, the next to last episode airs tonight. I'm super excited about it. We'll see how it goes.
An ultimate.
I just like that the show itself is going to be a totally different story with different characters every season, which I think is awesome.
It's like, it'll be a brand of quality as opposed to a continuing serial.
It's American Horror Story, except it's American Noir Story.
Yeah, right. And probably a little less campy.
And probably a little less campy.
Nice.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Tim.
Guys, thank you very much. Had a good time.
And once again, you can see you at Nakatomi...
NakatomiInc.com, that's INC, and you can also find me on MrDoyle.com, that's MRDoyle.com. Or if you just Google Tim Doyle, I think I might be the number one result still.
Right on.
You guys definitely want to pick up at least a couple of these prints. It's just amazing work.
Brings you awesome person karma.
Hey, it's oneofus.net, broadcasting live from Staple 2014.
With Wolfman Jack.
Day two. All right, spinning all your favorite waxy oldies from the 70s and the early 80s.
And Louis Armstrong.
I think that's going to make your voice worse.
It's probably not helping. Yes, definitely not helping.
Yeah, this is a hell of a thing.
It's a hell of a thing.
Yeah.
At least people can actually see us today.
Yeah, there have been less people walls erected in front of our table today.
Yeah, some dude just took our picture.
Yeah, not sure if he was part of the convention or if he's got a really weird Robert Mapplethorpe series he's doing where it's going to look like people are shitting on our heads.
Piss Chris.
Yeah. But we're still at it. We've actually been talking to a lot of cool people who come up, check out the website, and yeah, it's been fun.
It's all good. You're starting to drive me crazy with your Jeff Goldblum laugh.
I did that last week on the sports show after somebody had mentioned Jeff Goldblum, and everyone was like, how is that Jeff Goldblum? And I was like, you guys are clearly forgetting that scene in Jurassic Park where they're on the helicopter and he turns to Dr. Grant and Ellie and is like, so you two dig up dinosaurs? You dig up dinosaurs? And they're like, yeah. And his response is just, it's like, how is that a human response to anything?
Sounds like it's about to start playing.
ZZ Top suddenly boards the helicopter.
It's like you predicted that this meme was going to happen. How did you do that?
I don't know. It's like
we're back in time.
It is totally a function of spending way too much goddamn time on the internet.
Dinosaurs, mine. I might get eaten.
That epoch outside the Pleistocene. Oh, what were we talking about?
I don't know. Something vaguely resembling comic books, poster art. A lot of good people here. I was admiring the work of Paul Hanley, who's a great poster artist, and Robert Wilson is doing really incredible stuff. Just so much good stuff. Right now, someone is singing happy birthday to someone else.
Apparently a druid's birthday is today.
A druid?
It is a very somber-sounding happy birthday. I think you're going to end in a sacrifice.
It's the monks from chant over there.
When the Gregorians have a birthday, it is something to behold. Is that it?
That's it. I don't know anymore.
We're hoping to have some more guests here momentarily, but wanted to keep you guys updated that we are, in fact, still alive.
We have to save something for the Oscars, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Live from Staple, not live.
Stop saying
Staple.
Live.
I don't know why. It's just you say
we're
that.
We're live.
I don't know.
We're technically live at the moment.
Staple, we're here with creator of Too Much Coffee Man, Shannon Wheeler, old friend of Martin Thomas of mine from back in the day.
Yeah.
One of the original, the crew of Austin's comic artists
back then. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Along with Corey Coleman and Sam Hurt and Martin Thomas and a bunch of other ne'er-do-wells. But now you live in Portland.
Yep.
Where you work,
West Coast Austin.
We work not only like continuing to bolster caffeine sales, but also you have a book that Martin and I were both raving about, oh God, well now I can't.
God is disappointed in you.
God is disappointed in you, which is
he is, Chris, which for is forgetting that name.
A story of the basically the story of the Bible in a very quick form, very funny form, with illustrations by Shannon.
Yep, yep,
huge fan of that book.
Well, thank you. No, it was, yeah, it was a long. I think it was like a 3-year project altogether.
Yeah. We were, I was talking to you about that before. It's like, so what's next? The Book of Mormon, Scientology texts?
I don't know. I want to do, I have a few ideas. Like, I want to do some history stuff or the Founding Father stuff, like the Constitution and other things that people talk about having read, but they haven't actually read yet. But Mark wrote a short story about a guy who goes to Mars. And I think I'm leaning towards doing just a graphic novel with him, as just departing from the book format and just going to graphic novel stuff.
Well, have you have any ideas about what it might be about?
When it would be out? Probably a year from now.
No, what it might be about.
Oh, what it might be about. Yeah, the idea is that there are they discover oil reserves on Mars, and all the corporations are rushing to get there first, because the first person there can plant the flag and own it all. But the problem is, so all these corporations are making spaceships to get there,
trying to get their ass to Mars.
And so one of the corporations finally figures out the problem is getting people back. So it was taking, so they just figured they'd send somebody on a one-way mission and then they beat everybody else. So it's the story of this guy's one-way mission to Mars, and then when he gets there, Earth falls apart, so they don't really need the oil anymore, and he discovers all these rovers that have developed self-awareness. All the Land Rovers or Mars Rovers and stuff have become cognizant, and a little robot society, so he becomes like the one human in this robot society.
Nice.
That sounds pretty cool. There's a lot of ground to explore philosophically there, that's for sure.
Well, not only that, but it's actually somewhat grounded in what's happening right now in NASA. They were talking about this woman who may be the first astronaut to go to Mars, but with the caveat that she knows it's a one-way mission.
Oh, really? I didn't even know about that.
Oh, yeah. You should, like, no, and that's what
that's hilarious.
What I loved when you were describing your story, I was like, wow, that can really tie into, because the whole debate right now is like she has a family. And people are either saying she's a pioneer, she's so brave, or, you know, what a selfish person leaving her family behind just in the name of science. So you kind of got both sides of it going on. So I like the idea of how you deal with the fact that once you're there, you know you're never coming back.
Right, right.
That's a really great concept.
Yeah, I really liked it. And it's funny. It has a real Kurt Vonnegut,
sure,
Sirens of Titan tone to,
sure,
it that it just resonates with me.
And your work has always been, like, thick with short takes on philosophy, even Too Much Coffee Man, which I guess you talk, you know, coffee shops are bastions of people sitting and talking about the deeper things in life over espresso buzz. Is this something that you feel like eventually you want to make more of a, like, you know, a focus with what you do?
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, I want to do more Too Much Coffee Man stories, and that always lends itself to sort of an existential questioning. I'm just finishing up a story, new Too Much Coffee Man stuff for Dark Horse Presents, and one of the subplots in that is that Too Much Coffee Man moves in with this, he needs a place to rent, so he moves into this house, and the woman that is renting to him acts as though they'd been already married for 10 years, and so so it's all about this identity thing where she argues with him, and it's just slowly easier for him to acquiesce and be married than it is to fight and not be married.
Yeah, we know what that's like.
Yeah.
Look, I got to say, Shannon, before Staple, I discovered Too Much Coffee Man, and it's very rare that I read a comic strip that, you know, I read, you know, probably about 24 of them. I went back and tracked through. It's very rare that reading that many comic strips, I get a big chuckle out of every single one. But I got such a huge chuckle out of every single Too Much Coffee Man that I read.
Oh, well, thank you.
I especially like the one that you did where you're essentially addressing every conversation you've ever had with anyone who's a fan. It's like, I don't like coffee. You should make Too Much Iced Tea, Man. Or
yeah.
I'm, you know, and I almost, I was very tempted to make a joke that you actually lampooned
Spoon in that comic strip, which right now I feel like I'm not enough Coffee Man. Which,
right, right.
Yeah, and it was like, no, that one's been covered.
You'd be more like too much Whataburger giant-sized fountain drink man.
This is true. This is true. That is a vice that I have. But it's just, it's so smart, and I like the way that you've incorporated your own experiences as a comic strip artist into the character.
You have no idea how many girlfriends I've pissed off over the years by just transcribing conversations or usually arguments just verbatim into comic strips. And like, this is not funny.
I disagree.
Worried about that myself with stuff that I've worked on writing, because everyone, you know, you draw from your own experiences, of course, and a lot of the characters I've been designing have been thinly veiled versions of people I used to hang out with, some of which I still know on Facebook and such, you know, those distant college friends. And I wonder, these people are like, I can't believe you made that happen. I never did that at that party you were talking about. Yes, it's not you. At no point do I say this is autobiographical.
If it was you, we would also be trying to predict what you're going to do in the future by writing these stories, which is odd. It's very strange.
So do you don't even drink that much coffee anymore, though, do you?
No, I drink my share.
Do you?
Oh yeah, probably way more than I should. But.
You came down here to open a coffee store.
Well, yeah, actually, it's the Superhuman Bean. He's the one that flew me down. Just to be at the opening and just be there and draw people and hang out and sort of celebrate the opening of this little 24-hour coffee shop. And he's like, hey, you want to come down? I was like, well, if you get me a plane ticket, I'm there. And so he's like, yeah, come on down. So that's why I'm here at the Staple even. Yeah. It's great.
Perfect place for you to be. And I'm curious, did you get to hold the giant golden scissors and cut in and kind of a ribbon before people went into the store?
No, but we did have beer, and I did open a few of those.
Oh, that's fine. That's totally acceptable.
Actually is a Too Much Coffee Man coffee store, but you were saying it's in South Africa.
Yeah, I've been real careful about where and how to license Too Much Coffee Man. And it's good and bad. I mean, I probably could have made a lot more money if I had just done a... you know, cheap coffee with whatever coffee company, but I've just been real protective of it, and I've done a Converse commercial. I did a beer just recently with Gigantic Brewing. I'm open to doing a coffee, but it needs to be good. I don't want something that I'm ashamed of.
Yeah,
you don't want something with your name on it to be, you know, mediocre or worse.
Yeah, and everybody gives whatever you do, people give you hell about. And
sure.
And so if you do something bad, I just imagine it's tenfold.
And there's always going to be that group that thinks anytime you're involved in art, if you make money off it, you're a sellout. It's like, so I'm just supposed to work at the restaurant?
Well, yeah.
Poverty is apparently the stasis we're supposed to be looking for here.
Pretty much. I think, yeah, you need to suffer for your art. You need to be impoverished. Never get paid for what you do. Yeah, I think that's the standard. That's what makes great art.
I've been doing that long enough. I'm totally ready to sell out. If anyone out there listening wants me to sell out,
you will
them,
not be anywhere near as cautious about the brands.
You'll take
adult diapers. I don't even think it's selling out. I think you know, you just do the things. You know, you make it's okay to make money, and it's still not selling out. Like it's,
no, you're right.
You know what? It's a what the for pornography where there was a judge who basically said he didn't know how to define porn, but he knew it when he saw it.
Yeah.
And it's like with selling out. It's like, I can't exactly say what it is, but I definitely, when I see it, or I know it when I see it.
Quote always made me laugh because it reminds me of that. I don't know much about art, but I know what I like. And I was like, was he saying that pornography is art?
Is it not?
I just put a judge saying it.
There's a whole can of worms discussion.
I think maybe everyone misread what he was trying to say, is what I'm saying.
What he was trying to say is, I want to see a lot more of
a lot of pornography. You know, the internet seems like a good place for that.
Yeah, someone should direct that judge to the internet.
I was just like on the internet the other day, and the pop-ups or whatever are coming up, and it's like, so-and-so wants to chat with you. You know, just these horrible ads for, you know, porn. And I'm all annoyed by this porn that's popping. And I thought, how did I get to a point in my life where porn is annoying to me? Like, if I was a teenager, like, and the future self came and said, yes, someday you'll be on the computer and porn will randomly pop up and it will... and you'll be annoyed by it. I would have said, there's no chance.
Some sort of dystopian version
it's like,
of
what has happened to you?
Hey, 12-year-old Brian, at some point, female nudity will be ubiquitous.
I would be like, I don't know what that word means, future self.
Exactly.
Stupid kid.
You will act disdainful of very convincing fakes of celebrities naked.
Yes. My favorite thing to do, you know those pop-ups you mentioned?
Yeah.
There's a thing, apparently, where if you actually click on it, it pretends to have a conversation with you like it's a real person. So I try to find the most horrifying shit possible to say. To make so it's like, hi, what are you into? And I'm like, oh, I like to hang people and cut them. It's like, are you close by? And I'm like, why? So I can murder you?
You've got to be on about 15 watch lists by this point, at least.
Just, because there's no actual person, it just kind of tickles me that the responses are exactly the same, no matter what horrible shit you put in there.
There was a thing going around a couple days ago. Gizmodo posted a link to it, this one website, PornMD, that has a thing where you can just click it and it shows all the searches everybody does on their porn site. And so I took to going on there and going, librarians with half a head, and just weird, just to see how people reading that scroll are going to go like, wait, what?
Is there a website that caters to my fetish of eating cereal out of a human skull? That's really all I want to know.
You guys have way too much time on your hands. You need to work more, I think.
You sound like my mom.
So you said you're working on the graphic novels. Is there anything else on the way?
Finishing up the Too Much Coffee Man for Dark Horse. The graphic novel, which we've just been tossing around ideas of like what a next project is. And that one, I think, is fitting. So I'm gonna just run a few pages and sort of see a style that I like and I'm comfortable with, and see if it works. I mean, maybe it won't, but I am excited about it. What else?
Has anybody ever talked to you about doing a cartoon of Too Much Coffee Man?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've run down that path a couple times.
Were you just not pleased with what the options were they had, or...?
It's a difficult cartoon comic to turn into a cartoon. It's a lot of internal dialogue. It's a lot of concept humor. And, the philosophical stuff doesn't make for, you know, Ren and Stimpy kind of, like, hitting each other in the head kind of humor. And I mean, Ren and Stimpy's like one of the best comics ever, but this is just, it's like the Doonesbury cartoon and how terrible that was.
Right.
Sorry, Gary Trudeau. But, yeah.
So John Crisfalusi is doing artwork with Miley Cyrus now, right?
That's pretty rad.
On her tour.
But I know, kind of jealous and astounded by that. But, the opera, though, I mean, like, I am doing the opera again this summer, and that's a weird... Like, that was something that I didn't think would translate. Like, I did, but Too Much Coffee Man translated to opera really well. And this is when I started thinking of, like, what makes cartoons, animation cartoons, work. And I started thinking about, like, physical humor. But opera is very much about internal dialogues, where people sing their feelings.
You sing the internal dialogue, yeah.
Yeah, and so it fit into opera just like a glove. It's a great, I don't know.
I never would have thought of that. I never would have made that connection. That's incredible.
Isn't it? It's a weird... I don't know. It's weird.
No, you're right, though, because I was just thinking the problem with doing it as a cartoon is you have what are essentially just, like, you know, random thoughts and affirmations that don't translate well to a narrative that lasts 30 minutes.
Right.
But an opera where you could literally take an aside and have a thought and then come back to the story... Yeah, that's what a comic
plus replace
is.
The long death scene with that period where you've run out of coffee and are actually coming down.
Yeah.
He does die in the opera.
Does he?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
That's played in a couple different cities now, right?
Yeah, we've done it. We just did it Berkeley a month or two ago, and it's been in San Diego, Portland. It's played a bunch. And then this time it'll be up at the Mary Hill Museum. We're doing a little art show and then doing the opera as well.
Wow.
And I don't know, we'll keep going. And actually, oddly enough, like, to animate, like, people want a film or a recording of an opera, but I don't think that, it doesn't translate, opera doesn't translate to film, but you can take an opera and translate that into a cartoon, and it works really well. you know, like, what's Opera Doc is.
Yeah, that's true.
There was a direct connection between those two things. That's not what you would expect.
It's circuitous, and it's just like, I do want to animate the opera. Like, that's a way to make all that work? And I don't know. That's long.
What's opera doc is the connective tissue. I don't know. Again, like I'm like, why didn't this occur to me before?
Wow. Once again, though, maybe that could go back to your original God concept book with like doing short versions of stories, and you could just translate the classic operas. Which, when you actually hear what the summation of all the classic operas, you're like, this is more disturbing than any horror movie I've ever heard of.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, opera was the cheap cinema of the day. It was, you know, Roger Corman kind of.
Yep.
Mass entertainment. Rape and murder and disaster. Irwin Allen style disasters.
From opera to Grand Guignol, from Grand Guignol to Roger Corman.
Right. Yeah. Direct.
Direct, yeah. Yeah. Almost no time in between. Almost no time in between. Except for Herschel Gordon Lewis. So Grand Guignol, Herschel Gordon Lewis, then yeah. We got it. So
people are furiously Googling at home.
Who were your big influences as a comic?
When I was starting off, it was... as a kid, I read a lot of strips that were just terrible, like Fred Bassett I really liked, and I liked, Garfield. I loved Garfield. And then I came across a Fat Freddy's Cat comic, and I thought, oh, this is like Garfield. And, I was a little kid, and I started reading it, and then all of a sudden, I saw what humor really was.
Yeah.
And it just blew my mind, and it just all of a sudden opened up worlds, and... So, yeah, Gilbert Shelton really did that. And then it was Sam Hurt in when I was in high school, I came to Austin and picked up Sam Hurt's first book. And that made me, I'd like the subtlety of the humor and the characters were really formed. And I thought, this is something, I want to do things like this. So that kicked me back into comics real hard. Then, of course, the obvious, from and
sure.
All the normal pantheon of people.
Did you ever get to meet Gilbert when you were living here in Austin?
Not in Austin. It was in the late 80s. I was going to Paris to visit a girlfriend, and my uncle said, oh, when you're over there, you should go see Gilbert and give him some of these old photos. And I was like, oh, okay. And I thought, oh, Gilbert, I didn't know. I just thought it was some old hippie over there.
Connection.
And then, and then I saw Gilbert Shelton, and I was like, what the hell? And then, all these photos of my uncle with Gilbert Shelton and all the old crew, Dave Sheridan and Jack Jackson, and all those guys that did Austin Comics back then.
The first wave of Austin comic artists.
And then it makes sense. Like that's why we had the Fat Freddy's Cat at my house and the Freak Brothers stuff.
Yeah, I never discovered that till I moved to Austin, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Even though it was much bigger than that, certainly.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't until I got here and everyone's like, what? You've never heard of the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers?
I think it's some of the best. His ability to for storytelling is just astounding. I think it's so...
And I also discovered a lot of alternate ways to do drugs through that comic, too. I never knew you could smoke it that way.
So it was entertaining and educational.
Pretty much. I feel like I learned a lot. And thankfully found out that women naked don't actually look that way.
It was a surprise to all of us.
It was more disappointing when I came to the same realization from Robert Crumb. But.
Right.
Well, anyway, Shannon, thanks so much for joining us.
I loved it.
Where can people find you online?
Oh, crap. I don't know.
I don't know.
My website's terrible. It's toomuchcoffeeman.com or tmcm.com. And then, I have the Facebook and Twitter. Oh, Much Coffee. I'm Much Coffee on Twitter. I always say really stupid things there.
Following.
I enjoy your posts on Twitter quite a bit, actually.
Well, thank you. You flatter.
Staple. 2014. Still not live.
Oh, God.
But alive.
Speak for yourself, big boy.
We're here with our old friend, Paul Benjamin. Well, he's young at heart, so.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm your old friend. I was just telling a story about how I didn't get carded walking into the bar. Like, they didn't even look at me as if I might need to give them an ID. They were just like, hey, how's it going? And I was like, old.
How's it going, old?
Only elderly Korean women think I might not be 21 anymore, as near as I can tell.
Yeah.
There seems to be some sort of myopia going on there. I don't know what's happening.
Well, and I work in video games and web design, so I'm often around, like, these 20-year-old designers and stuff. And so they get carded, and, like, I'll pull out my ID and give it to the guy after they get carded. And, you know, the waiter's just like, yeah, no thanks.
And he's like, oh, that's adorable.
You're cool, dude.
Any of them are always like, hey, Paul, will you go buy us some beer? Because Paul Benjamin, who is working actively in comics, working on a whole bunch of different titles in the past. We've talked to you in the past about your line of Pixar-related titles that you worked on for Boom, Monsters Incorporated being the big one. And then, of course, Marvel Adventures is one of the big things you worked on. You were doing The Incredible Hulk?
Marvel Adventures Hulk, yep. Did a 12-issue run on that. And I did some Marvel Adventures Spider-Man as well, and some of the Spider-Man family, too.
What are you working on right now?
Right now, I am editing a book called Forgotten City that is available on Comixology. It's from a small publisher called Kid Domino. It's their first book. And they brought on Brian Glass and Pat Broderick, and now Alan Porter is working on it. And it is, the first two issues are out on Comixology right now. Third one will be out soon. We're working way ahead. We've already got pages, I think, for issue 8.
Can you talk about what it's about?
Where we are. So Forgotten City is a post-apocalyptic future. And there's this mysterious guy called Prophet who has put together these gladiatorial games where he's bringing in young people and they wear costumes, so you don't really know which part of this society they come from. Are they from the domes where all the rich people live, or are they part of the outcasts that live outside of the domes in the radiation wasteland? But they have these underground gladiatorial games, and what you start to realize is that Prophet is kind of building up a generation that can fight back against this government that is full of these intricate conspiracies. And as the story builds, you start to see it's more than just these gladiatorial games. It is this society of the Forgotten City that is at stake. And then you start to realize that there's some connection between our current world and how it got to this state.
Hmm.
So it's building and building and building.
So you're trying to make a political statement is what you're saying.
I'm not trying to make a political statement. I'm just editing the book.
I can't be held responsible for what these terrorists are doing.
You live in the domes? Are you one of the people from the domes?
I am Katniss.
I've always considered myself an irradiated mutant, so I guess I would be outside of the domes.
Well, you have the look for it.
I do, actually.
Yeah. You sound like one today.
I actually do sound like a mutant.
We all do. You go to a convention, and you go out and party at the bar, and you have to yell over the noise and drink a bunch of beer, and then your voice is one octave lower
the next day. The term con crud.
Yeah. Concrud, yep.
I got the concrud.
Well, I think concrud really is the sickness.
Yeah, but that
like,
can be...
You can just lose your voice and still be perfectly healthy.
It's hard to tell sometimes if you're genuinely getting sick or you're just worn down from doing this.
Yeah, I'm playing that fun guessing game right now. Hooray!
So, Paul, we've known each other for a while. We've had you on the old Leog show quite a few times.
It was one of my great pleasures in life to be on the Leog show.
One of our more entertaining guests along the way, to be sure.
And then I get to talk about my all-ages comics and then use lots of swear words and make sex jokes.
Yeah, it's like all your fans are like,
my innocence is lost.
I thought he was a sweet gentleman. No, they wouldn't say gentleman.
No, probably not.
No, nobody would say gentleman.
You told me it was Dad writing that. I'm sorry, honey, your dad. I don't even know who he is.
Wow, that got dark. That got dark quickly.
I was grabbing for what I could. So you draw from what you know from life. So,
sure.
You know.
Wait, are you trying to tell me something about my dad?
No.
He's also not trying to tell you something about your dad.
No, not at all. So where did you get started doing comics?
Like, really where I got started doing comics?
Yeah,
like, sixth grade when I started making my own comic book strips for a fake newspaper project. And I did some character called Super Greek.
Super Greeky.
It was a project about mythology, which is a surprise to no one who knows my book Pantheon High that I did for Tokyo
Pop. I love Pantheon High.
Love mythology. So I had to write this newspaper that was all about different stories from Greek mythology, and like all of the photos in it were traces that I did from my Deities and Demigods D&D book.
Oh, yeah. I doubt you were the only person who was doing that
book. I'm sure I was not.
I owned that book entirely just to, like, admire how cool the images of the gods were.
Did you have the original one that had all the Melnibonian gods?
Oh, yeah.
That, like, were not properly licensed?
I still have somewhere in a box all the very first D&D edition, like, when they were basically pamphlets.
Yep, yep. I still have my characters. I had to do this school project, and I made a comic book strip of this character, Super Greek, and he was like a Greek guy in a loincloth with a sword and a shield, and he gets assaulted by a bunch of soldiers, and then the next panel's like a black panel of sound effects, and then the next panel is Super Greek standing amid body parts, because he has just cut all of these dudes down.
Nice.
And, you know, I've got some funny dialogue in there or whatever. So this was in sixth grade. If I did that in sixth grade now, I'd be in the counselor's office. Like, oh, yeah, we're a little worried about your son coming to school with a machine gun.
Well, you know, I mean,
honestly, it'd probably be a broadsword, but sure. Yeah.
All those kids, you know, I mean, come on, they've all seen 300 at this point. So,
right, this is true. This is true. So that was, like, my first comics work. My first professional comics work was working at Malibu Comics.
Oh,
when Malibu was owned by Marvel.
Right.
And I was hired as the assistant to the president. The best thing about my first day at work is that the previous assistant sent out an email to everybody saying Scott's new assistant as an introduction to Paul Benjamin. But the email system at the time, it would cut off your subject line at a certain number of characters.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, there was an email that said, Scott's new ass.
And
I was that ass.
I would love a new ass, personally. Still haven't gotten to that technology yet, so.
I don't want to replace my ass yet, because Chris really needs the job. And
oh, now, come on.
So it was my first work in comics. Then, you know, I did a little bit of writing of, like, text about characters and that kind of thing. And then 4 months into that gig, Marvel laid everybody off except for, like, the coloring department. And they were gone about a year later.
Wow.
And Marvel doesn't do anything with the Malibu characters now. I don't know why. They still own them, but...
Well, you know how they are with that stuff, though. They just want to hold on to it until, like, who knows?
And I mean, in their defense, I think they'd rather just build up their own characters, because, you know, why spend money on Prime when you can spend money on Spider-Man?
And one of those characters the creator of one of those characters might eventually come up to be something much bigger and go, you know what I really want to do is work with that, you know, reboot that character again.
Right, yeah, who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
And they're like, well, you got to go to Marvel.
And then after that, I ended up at, I did work at Platinum Studios for a while doing film development stuff. And after about 4 years of that, and, well, if you know anything about Hollywood, then you know there's lots of projects that don't get made.
Oh, yeah,
sure.
So at the time, the company had been very successful, but only, like, one or two things got made, and I was at a point where I was like, you know what, I really want to entertain more than just Hollywood executives. I'd kind of like to entertain the general public. And then I started working at Humanoids Publishing, and so that was really where I got into the comic book business, because I was editing both the American translations of the French graphic novels, and I was creating a bunch of new graphic novels for both the U.S. and France, teaming up European creators with American creators. And I was doing Metal Hurlant magazine. My French is so bad, I may as well just totally mispronounce it. Which was the original magazine that was licensed to the U.S. as Heavy Metal. So it was sort of the origin, and they were relaunching it. And so I edited a bunch of short stories, again, with some great creators. And that was where, you were just asking a minute ago over at my table, you were looking at that copy of Metal Hurlant. That was where I actually published my first short story. It wasn't my first time writing in comics, because I had written text. I had worked on the Wolverine Encyclopedia, actually. Mm. But it was my first story, and the way it happened was we were having a hard time getting writers to write stories for Metal Hurlant. Like, we wanted to get some really big names to come in and do short stories, but it was tough because they didn't want to give up the rights. They wanted to own a piece of it. The problem was we knew we were losing money on this magazine, so it wouldn't have made any sense for us to be like, okay, we'll give you royalties. It's a 60-page issue. You wrote 8 pages, so therefore you get X percent as a writer, and your artist gets Y percent. We would have done all of this accounting and paid an accountant to send them a letter every 6 months that said, hey, guess what? You didn't earn any royalties because we didn't make any money on the book.
Right.
Because it was sort of seen as a lost leader to build up, you know, a bigger audience and get people into the Humanoids brand and buy the graphic novels. Anyway, so
you got to lose money to make money,
right? And it was an anthology, which are always challenging in the comic book business.
Yeah.
So I said to the owner of the company, I said, okay, how about if I write up some short story ideas? Like I could write a summary, and then find a writer who's interested in that, then they didn't come up with it. They're just writing the script.
Right.
And that might be a good way to solve this problem. And he said, that sounds great. So I go and I write up this idea for a story, and I bring it to him. He says, that's great. Why don't you write it? And I was like, well, that's not why we started doing this. And if I write it, and then I turn around to some other writer who's, you know, sent me a pitch, and I say, sorry, your story isn't good enough. Mine's going in the book, but yours didn't make the cut.
Right.
Like, I don't feel comfortable with that kind of a conflict of interests. And he said, well, everything that you like, you have to send to our editors in France to get approved, right? And I was like, yeah, that's true. He said, so just put a different name on it and send it in with all the other stuff that you send in and see what they think. So I did that, and I did a story under a pseudonym, and I sent that off to the editors, and they were like, oh, okay, this sounds pretty cool, you know, have them write a script. So I wrote my script, sent it in again under a pseudonym, along with all the other scripts by all the other writers. And so here's the thing, when they would give me notes on other writers' scripts, they would just give me an unvarnished set of notes, and then I would go to the writer and, you know, deliver
soften
it in a nuance.
Soften it up a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
So I take it to them, and they're like, oh, great, here's your notes. And they were the harshest notes I have ever gotten in my career. Mind you, of course, it's my first story.
So you're, the most creative writing you've done was turning that into softballs.
Yeah, I had to give it to myself. I had to write it, oh, let me soft pedal this. So they were the harshest notes I've ever gotten, but they were the best notes I've ever gotten. Because there was no, like, attempt to save my feelings at all.
Right.
And it was great. And then they took that short story and they gave it to Fred Beltran, who is one of the top artists working in the European business. And they made it the cover.
Wow.
So I just had no idea that this was going to happen,
well,
and they didn't know it was me.
Yeah, considering that you had gotten such harsh notes on it, you're like, well, this is going to get buried in the back.
Right. Well, I mean, I rewrote it based on their notes, and they liked what we ended up with.
They're probably not used to dealing with writers who so completely, you know, say, okay, sure, here's what you suggested.
Right. Right. Yeah, right, right. Who don't just say, yeah, okay. Thanks for the notes. Here, I changed 2 words. Here's my second draft.
Editors don't understand art.
Yeah, I try to listen to my editors. So I don't know if that makes me rare.
No, that's a good philosophy, I think.
I mean, you know, unless my editor's an idiot.
Well, yeah, in which case, don't.
Right, but I've never actually worked with an idiot editor. All my editors have been good, and they've had good notes that I felt like really helped the story.
So that was the point where you decided that you actually thought that actually being the writer of the comics was the direction you wanted to head in?
Well, yeah, so that's an interesting question. I had started in the business out of college. I had moved to Los Angeles because it was either L.A. or New York, and the only time I had been to New York was during a garbage strike in the 70s. So my impression of New York was garbage strike and, you know, crime-ridden in Marvel Comics.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to fathom the compounding of filth that comes from a garbage strike in New York in the 70s.
Right? That's
filth
what I'm
on
saying.
Filth, on filth, on filth,
on filth, on filth. It was like your
sound
mind.
Like Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Filth, filth, flam, filth.
Filth, filth, flarn, and filth.
So I wanted to work in the comic book biz. I moved to Los Angeles figuring Hollywood would be my you know, backup job.
Sure.
Jesus.
And I ended up doing work in Hollywood and then doing work in comics. So it all actually worked out. But I was at a point where I was editing comics, really loving that, and had kind of, you know, decided, well, I guess I won't really write them. I like being this this in this part of the creative process. And I was working with Alejandro Jodorowsky.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So talented. Is, I mean, he's amazing. He's so talented. Brilliant man. And he kind of convinced me that I should try writing again. And one of the things he said to me was, he said, well, you know, you need to write every day. And I said, yeah, I know, I've heard that, and I know that's a thing I should do, but then, you know, I lose track, whatever. And I know there are people out there listening to this saying, oh, yeah, me too. I know I should write every day, but then life catches up to me. And Jodo put it very simply. He said, do you brush your teeth every day? I said, yeah. He's like, do you take a shower every day? I was like, yeah, unless I'm camping. He said, then write every day. Make that a habit. And that's what I've done, and I've done it for, God, over 10 years now. Every single day I write. At first it was like I had to write something, and it could be four pages, it could be a sentence, like, but it had to be some kind of creative writing. But for many years now it's been a page a day. So I pick a project, I work on it a page a day, and then when it's done, I move on to the next thing the next day. Huh. And then I revisit those scripts or stories and find, you know, mine them for the stuff that is actually good.
Right.
Because at a page a day, it's not going to be the best work you do.
So do you find that you have a lot of projects that have been slowly gestating for years that you don't want to give to anybody else?
I have many of them that I will never show to anybody until I have made them good. I have one that I love the title, and I love the concept, and I wrote it all. And I know now that I've finished it, like, it's not good. And I know that I can keep the concept, but I have to reimagine the story.
Yeah.
The direction I took it in, there's, like, I was really hooked on this one idea, and that one idea is what's breaking the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You found that point where it just kind of stopped dead because that idea just doesn't participate.
Everything built on that idea.
Oh, that's tough.
That's rough, yeah.
Which is okay. Like, I still like the world. I can use some of the characters. But if I hadn't been doing that page a day thing, I would have just kept putting off the whole project.
Right, exactly.
And by doing it this way, I make progress on things, even if I'm working on something else that's like, you know, I'm spending my entire day on it. As long as I'm doing that one page a day, I'm always moving these other projects forward that otherwise would get no attention.
Right, it's like that old expression, how do you eat an elephant? You do one page every day. That's how you eat that elephant. That makes
and they're delicious.
They're delicious elephants.
What do you think as a writer is the biggest and stumbling block?
Sucking.
Well, outside of having no talent, we're going to assume that those people have their own series of problems.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. Being talentless is something that we all have to overcome, or at least the left side of this table has to overcome.
It's funny because Chris is sitting on the left.
No, I am too. I just meant left of you.
Oh, I see.
You know, the more left, the more talentless, I think, is what he was getting at.
Well, now you've been watching too much Fox News.
I see what you did there.
Oh, topical, satirical.
You also worked on video games for a while.
I did. I produced a lot of video games and did a lot of writing for video games. Gosh, what have I worked on? I did a G.I. Joe game, a Wolverine game, Spider-Man, Star Wars.
Did you do
Star
that Wolverine, the one based on the crappy movie, but the game was good?
So I did not that one. So there was the movie.
Yeah.
And then there was the game for, like, Xbox and PS3.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that was really good.
Yeah, it was much better than the movie.
I worked on the Wii version that was, like, Wii and PlayStation 2. And maybe one other console device. But that one was not as good as the one you're thinking of.
Okay.
Because that one I loved. I loved the one that I played all the way through that. And
it was a whole game based around the amnesia bullets concept.
Was yours based around the amnesia bullets? Is that
right?
Where you went wrong?
Yeah. No, so the problem with this one was just the budget had some shifts in scope and that kind of thing. Well, I didn't love it because I don't love the Wii. I can't use the Wii controller.
I'm not a fan of the Wii.
I'm with you guys on that.
I'm sure if I had kids, I could learn, but I cannot figure that thing out. So it was a different kind of gameplay because it was so much of it was based on using the Wiimote. But the real problem I had, so I did what I did was a bunch of rewriting on it. I rewrote it, some of the storyline stuff to fit together better, and I wrote a lot of the dialogue, the character barks. So just to give you an example, originally the game had, there was just like going to be one level where Wolverine at the very beginning ends up fighting some lumberjacks. Right? Because he's a lumberjack at the beginning of the story.
And that's okay.
Story. And so it wasn't very fun because you sleep all night and you work all day.
Yeah, exactly.
So Wolverine is going to fight these lumberjacks, and I wrote like 12 different barks, is what they call them, for when...
I'm sorry, I can't let that one slide. They're called barks, and you're writing about lumberjacks. that's too easy. I can't just let that one lie.
Is that basically just stuff he says?
Like in a video game where a character says something that's like an indicator to you of, I'm low on health.
It's not a cutscene.
No. It's just like the little quips that they... So I did it most recently for the Marvel Heroes game. I wrote a bunch of the character dialogue for the MMO game.
I know a lot of people are playing that right now.
Yeah. Oh, it's a really fun game, and it's free.
Yeah.
So you can play lots of different characters for free, and then if you want, you can buy characters you really want, or the more you play, you can earn points that can let you buy the character eventually. So
I play that. There's a great line even there. Captain America said something like, "This is almost as good as that Marvel Adventures book by Paul Benjamin."
Okay, yeah, I wasn't as subtle in my dialogue as I would have liked.
I thought that was a little odd. I thought it was...
That is really specific.
Touch specific.
So Wolverine's fighting these lumberjacks, and I had written like a dozen lines for them to say when they're taking damage. And, you know, they were going to record a bunch of lines and put them in. Well, budgets get crunched and things get cut out and you have to stretch your assets as far as you can. So what ends up happening is there's like three levels where all you're doing is fighting these lumberjacks. But they've only recorded one of my lines for dialogue for when Wolverine injures them. Wolverine's injuring them all the time, and there's not like a long enough like space between how often they're going to trigger this line. So over and over again, you've got Lumberjack saying, "Can't stop the bleeding! Can't stop the bleeding!" as Wolverine lays into them. But what makes it even more ironic is they decided, since this was the Wii version, they're going to take out all the particle effects for blood. So now Wolverine is attacking people with his claws. There's no actual blood.
And they're saying,
can't stop the bleeding. Over and over.
And the person playing is like, "You seem to be doing a pretty good job of stopping the bleeding. I don't see any blood anywhere."
Pretty well staunched.
Yeah.
Is this an ironic statement? I know how lumberjacks are with their irony.
Are they cauterizing the wounds as they're happening? What's going on here?
Red hot lumberjack axes.
That's sexy.
Lumberjacks are badasses. That's the point.
Nice.
They can just seal up their own wounds.
What was your Wolverine line? You said you had a line for Wolverine.
Oh, God, I don't remember.
Yeah.
I'm the best there is at what I do. And what I do is make lumberjacks bleed.
That is weird, you know. I appreciate that he might fight maybe a lumberjack or two along the way, but just mass armies of lumberjacks flying at Wolverine.
You don't think of him fighting armies of lumberjacks because you don't think of armies of lumberjacks as being a thing that exists.
Yeah, it's very time-consuming, but, you know.
Do lumberjacks follow the same inverse law of ninjas? The more ninjas, the weaker they are.
One ninja
is really scary.
There's just a lumberjack standing off to the side with an axe bobbing back and forth, waiting for his turn to jump into the fight.
Stupid two-dimensional world.
That is too good. I want to play this game now.
Yeah, action movies in Flatland just aren't as exciting.
No.
Actually, one of my favorite experiences, I worked on a G.I. Joe game, and I was at a convention, and a father and his son came to my booth at the convention with a copy of the G.I. Joe game I had worked on. I had written for like the all console version, and I got to write all the little cards that were like the character info cards or vehicle info cards that go on like the back of the action figure. I wrote all those for the game. You could unlock them. But then he came to me. Oh, I also worked on the PSP version as a producer. But he came to me and he said, "This is my son and I's like go-to game when we want to have father-son time. We want to hang out. We play the G.I. Joe game. And like, we bonded so much over your game. Will you autograph it for us?"
That's really cool.
It was really cool. And one of my favorite things about conventions is meeting people who have enjoyed your work. There's nothing better.
agreed with that. That's
100%.
For sure.
Have you guys ever met someone who enjoyed your work?
Actually, when we went to...
I was kidding.
First year we went to San Diego.
It's like nobody's ever enjoyed your work.
First year we went to
Hold
San
on,
Diego.
Let me explain the joke. That makes it funnier.
I get it.
No,
first year we
Chris.
Went to San Diego Comic Con, there was this kid who drove there from Phoenix just to see us. He didn't even have a Comic Con pass. And it was so awkward. Because then I'm like, I feel like I should tap dance or something at this point.
Yeah. Right, right. But how do I live up to those expectations?
I know. I was like, that's a long trip just to see us. Do you want a back massage? I don't know.
There's yelling going on.
It's just Chris Necklace. He sounds like you now.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true. I actually had a kid contact me via Facebook when it was after we, it was probably, I think it was around Christmas, talking about One of Us. And he said that, you know, when Chris and I used to do stuff together on Spill, he had just been getting out of the military and was very depressed, like suicidal. And that listening to our stuff actually, like, put him in better spirits. So that was...
Lots
of yelling.
The indie game design panel is starting right now.
So,
which means nothing to you listening to this well after the fact.
Not at all.
However, I would like to mention that I actually put together the indie game design panel for the show.
Oh.
Because I have worked in the video game business, and Chris was like, hey, you know some people? And I was like, sure. So I asked a bunch of people, and they were all like, yeah, let's do that. Staples awesome.
And
awesome.
I know that you have to go to that panel because you warned me about this ahead of time. So
I can wait a few minutes.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not on the panel.
You just tell us that when it...
I just want to go see it because I helped organize.
You just tell us when we've kept you too long.
Right, 12 hours later. We may want to cut some of this out.
You know, 24-hour cast. You know, my favorite dish with radishes really is...
What is your favorite rad dish?
My favorite rad dish?
Yeah.
I don't know. I make something with a pearl barley that's pretty good, but...
I don't even know what... Is Pearl Barley a singer from the 20s?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
She's dead now and in my dish with radishes.
See, that also makes sense to me in a terrifying way.
And she's delicious in a salad.
Yeah, she's beautiful. She's absolutely radishing.
Her and some guy named Cobb. What are we doing? We have lost our minds on day two.
Was there a question?
No.
Back there?
Actually, I'm curious, as a writer, we've talked to a lot of artists today, but as a writer, who do you find to be your biggest influences?
That's a good question. I have a hard time, because I think about that sometimes. I'll read interviews, and people are like, who are your biggest influences?
Who affected you?
And I kind of don't know who my biggest influences are. I know that I like to write, and actually, I thought about this recently. I was answering questions for an interview about what books I would take to, if I was going to, like, be trapped on a deserted island.
Yeah.
And I like to clarify, deserted island, not desert island.
Yeah, nobody wants to go to
a
desert.
Tropical island.
Yeah, how does that even work? How does a desert island work?
How to escape from a deserted island.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I were an island full of dessert, and this is where we go off on our tangent about our favorite kind of pie.
So are you talking about, are we just talking about Glad with a Chance of Meatballs here?
I think we're making grammar jokes, which makes us like next level nerdy. I love it so much.
So it was for Revolution SF, and it was, what books would you take? And you can't take any of like the obvious graphic novels. Like, it's only graphic novels. You know, you can't take Mouse, and you can't take Dark Knight. Like, none of the obvious
Watchmen
ones.
Watchmen.
And I was making this list, and as I looked at it, I'm like, Chew and Skull Kickers, and you know, the Justice League run that was DeMatteis and McGuire and Giffen when it was the funny Justice League. And I'm reading this list, and yeah, there's like Walking Dead on there and Authority and some grittier stuff, but there's a whole lot of funny comics. And if you read my books, like, I've done Monsters, Inc., I've done Muppets, the Marvel Adventures stuff, you know, have a lot of humor in them. Pantheon High is full of jokes.
So you're probably not going to be filling in for Robert Kirkman on The Walking Dead, is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, Robert might give me a call tomorrow. I'm not going to say no, Robert. But yeah, probably not.
Considering how dark that book is, almost all his other stuff is really really funny and comedy oriented.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he needs to do a palate cleanser for his brain after he's done writing a script.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not at all. And just by comparison, it seems that
right.
way.
Yeah.
I did notice a desiccated body with a copy of Super Dinosaur on it in a recent episode of the show.
Really?
Yeah, like the whoever was dead had been reading Super Dinosaur.
I did. Like, that's totally awesome. Missed that.
my first Metal Hurlock story was actually pretty dark and grim. So I can do dark and grim, but I happen to mostly go towards the funny stuff.
So you don't have that, you know, yearning part of your soul that wants to tell this, you know, ennui-laden
story? Yeah, I don't have enough angst.
No angst.
So I will say some of my favorite creators as I was growing up, on the comic side, you know, I loved X-Men.
Yeah.
So, you know, I gotta say Chris Claremont. But, like, I hope I'm less verbose. But that was the style at the time, too, right?
Yeah.
And so I loved his work and DeMatteis, right? I didn't pay attention to creators a lot when I read comics, though. Like, I was pretty old before I realized, oh, there are people who do this, and this is their job, and, like, one day I could do that as a job. I liked the characters. I didn't realize I was a John Byrne fan until I looked back at my collection and was like, oh, look, West Coast Avengers and Fantastic Four and X-Men and Alpha Flight and,
yeah,
you know, oh, I like John Byrne. I didn't realize it.
At least his work.
Yeah, I don't know John Byrne. But I liked his work. And then I also liked Douglas Adams. Was sure. One of my big influences.
Well, it seems like most comic writers today, at some point, formative years, read Hitchhikers, and it changed a lot of things for them.
Right.
Somewhere between that and Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Exactly. I was going to say, and Monty Python movies. Yep. That's exactly it.
It's that level of absurdism that you didn't even realize could be funny until you saw somebody doing it.
Yeah, you didn't even know it could exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of the funnier writers, I think, are the ones who really influenced me. And then, I mean, you know, I read a lot of the classic stuff. I read the reprints, so probably Stan Lee.
So if you could write in any character and you were given carte blanche to do whatever you wanted with them, what's the dream project?
One character?
Well, or, you know, or a team. Justice League or whatever you want.
Yeah.
Whatever book.
If it could be anything of an existing character, I often think Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd really love to do... First of all, now there's no pressure because they've been rebooted so many times. Like, nobody's going to be like, well, you're not... I mean, you're never as good as whatever their favorite incarnation is.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But it's been reinterpreted enough times that I feel like, okay, you know, I can come up with my own take on this. What I really want to do for the Legion is do the story about how the Legion and all of their time traveling basically broke the space-time continuum, and that's why they keep getting rebooted.
That is smart. That's some meta.
So write the reboots into the reboots,
right?
Including the Geoff Johns reboot that kind of rebooted the reboots.
Man, I'm hearing the Inception music already. Like, just
I start to think sometimes Geoff Johns is actually Jerry Cornell from Sliders. He's just going into like parallel worlds for comics and recreating them.
So this is another thing that I would do if I had the parallel reality technology from Sliders. I've already determined I would go into the dimension where Firefly ran 7 seasons.
Oh, sure.
And watch all of those.
Who
I would
wouldn't
go
want to live
the,
in that dimension?
Go into the dimension. Well, the problem is it's run by dinosaurs. So,
oh, shit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't take just the good. You got to take the bad.
Nathan Fillion is charming here. You should see Dinosaur Nathan.
Except for those little stubby arms.
Nathan Philosaurus is really... He's
like, my fists...
Man.
My fists are my hammers. Wait, no, I'm a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You can't see that I'm waving my arms like a T-Rex.
The sexy Christina Hendricks doesn't translate as well.
Some people think that Alan Tudyk is not the leading Cro-Magnon man that he should be. That remains to be seen. We don't want to keep you from your panel, but I really want to thank you for taking the time and sitting down and just chatting with us.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you guys for having me. It's always a lot of fun, and I look forward to working with you guys sometime in the future.
Yeah, hopefully.
Chris and I have been talking about figuring out a podcast. So if you're listening to this and you think I should do a podcast, send an email and tell them, based on this weird conversation, what the podcast should be.
And even if you don't do that, we're probably still going to do it.
Oh, yeah, sure. We're not going to take your input anyway. I just kind of want to see what people say.
We're just going to write new audio drama that's the continuing story of Firefly, but with all dinosaurs.
Dinofly?
Dinofly!
Stable.
It'll be all right, Brian. You can make it.
Stable.
Well, you do know they actually set like a sort of crawl under barbed wire endurance course to leave, right?
Oh, stable.
The first step of the way of this endurance course is you have to talk to Matt Frank about My Little Pony.
Just give me, Brian.
Give me the fucking gun. I'll eat a bullet right now. I can't. Matt Frank, I like you. I'm going to let you finish. I'm going to let you finish on your ponies, but that shit is, I can't. I can't do it. I really try to be as open-minded as I possibly can. Can we talk about anything else? Like, maybe monsters?
Oh, well, you know, we could talk about monsters, but first, let me tell you guys.
Oh boy. this does have to, this story's good. This does have to be told.
Do you self-identify with the term brony?
Not as much as I used to.
No, he self-abuses to My Little Pony, I think.
Well, there is that.
So you're a clopper.
You say that.
No, don't.
I think that's a pejorative term.
I think it's not pejorative enough.
Well, no, so
I was only being empathetical.
I was being snarky. I don't know what the fuck he said.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was funny because our friend Richard Whitaker was here, and he had a couple of gifts for me. And a couple of them, you know, I'm like, oh, right on. Like, he hands me the novelization for Pacific Rim. Sure, I'll read that.
It's just a lot of roar.
And punch, 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 roar. Punch, punch, roar. And then he also handed me something called Starzinger, which I'm fascinated by because apparently it's like some kind of 1970s anime, and it's about, it's the journey to the West, the whole story of Son Goku, but it's a space opera.
Okay.
So I'm down.
I'm in. Yeah, that sounds good.
And then he hands me...
Oh, God.
Which he made you close your eyes for.
He made me close my eyes for this.
I'm surprised he didn't make you open your mouth, too.
I honestly expected that for you.
It was like reaching that level of creepiness.
Yeah. And then he handed me My Little Pony, Equestria Girls, the full-length movie on DVD. I'm honestly a little disappointed it's not on Blu-ray.
It's using movie in the loosest possible terms.
Yeah, that's the disappointing part.
It did get a limited theatrical run, as I understand it.
See, that's the disappointing
But yes, I have in fact seen this. And let me give you guys a quick rundown.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm going to fall asleep for a second.
You know, you love this, Brian.
So Twilight Sparkle, who is now a princess in the...
See, he's laughing. He loves
this. In the My Little Pony universe, when you become a princess, it's basically equivalent to becoming a demigod. You have control over some vast elemental force. She's having trouble getting into the princess life, though, because she's got wings now, and wings are hard to control. And on top of all of that, somebody's stolen her crown. So now she has to go through this magical mirror portal into this strange world where there are no ponies, or at least not where she is. These strange creatures who walk on hind legs and have these things called hands. Yes, this is a Sliders episode with ponies.
I want to make it clear that I have never once murdered a single guest that we have ever featured on any show.
You've had shown remarkable restraint on.
You know what? I was tickled by that description of what the hell this thing is. It's really hard to adapt to having wings, guys. The princess lifestyle is not for everybody. Especially not for grown men.
Well,
anyway.
In all fairness, from monsters. My perspective, it's cute, you know, it's clearly for little girls, but I'll admit I'm tapping my foot during the songs and stuff.
You're a very brave person. I just want
tapping your foot in the sense that you're waiting for it to be over, or you're just you just can't stop the jam.
Considering by the end of the movie, the villain turns into a demon and shoots fireballs out of her hands and blows up part of the school, it gets pretty entertaining by that point. That's all that actually happens.
That is interesting.
In this world with presumably people in it, is My Little Pony a cartoon show that people...
That would have been delightfully meta, but no. All the people, though, do still have, like, fluorescent skin and are named things like Applejack
Lord.
Rarity.
So they basically just went into the Care Bears universe, is what you're saying.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Back when I was thinner and I was part of an all-male burlesque, I danced under the name Applejack.
I would have paid to see that.
These are facts about me that you didn't know.
Someone has to animate that.
Fan artists.
Nobody. No.
Get
no,
to it before
no,
I do.
Do not do this. No.
Oh
this,
well, now I have to do
no,
it. Okay.
God
nobody
damn it.
Do it now.
Now you have your new comic book idea.
Oh well, I'm going to work this into one of the backgrounds of the Godzilla comic. It's going to have to be.
Oh, Pandora. Yeah. What's that? A box?
Applejack is a podcaster who has a secret life as a burlesque dancer.
You're welcome for all the money you're going to make off of it.
Yes,
but.
I know.
So monsters, right?
Monsters. Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about monsters.
Yeah, let's do immediately, please.
Let's have a little palate cleanser here, huh?
So, the Godzilla trailer. Yeah, okay. It was funny. I got invited to be on a radio show in Washington, D.C., and they were asking me about the Godzilla trailer.
Oh, I thought they were going to ask you about the burlesque life, but go ahead.
No, well, they didn't ask me about My Little Pony for some reason. But they asked me about the Godzilla trailer, and I was just... It dawned on me how, even as someone who's not a huge Godzilla fan, I am just flipping my shit excited for this movie. And so I can only imagine that you, as, like, a kaiju king...
Thank you.
You have to be losing your mind.
I mean, it's one of those things where it'll come in waves.
Yeah.
Like, it'll hit me when I wake up. Oh, that's right, there's a Godzilla movie coming out.
You're like a little kid at Christmas. Oh, yeah, Godzilla's coming, yay.
I mean, just speaking as...
You are Godzuki, is what we're saying.
God, don't gotta be mean about it. Jesus.
Wait. Just so,
I don't
just...
kick down your door and piss on your carpet.
Wait a minute, just so
hey,
we're
man,
clear.
The carpet really tied to the room.
When I make jokes about you masturbating to My Little Pony, you laugh that off. When we call you Godzuki, you get horribly offended.
It's too much.
We
dude.
Know where the line is now.
Yeah, I had no idea there
actually,
was one.
In all fairness, for those who have no fucking clue what we're talking about,
which is to say, probably most people.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
we weren't old enough to watch the Hanna-Barbera Godzilla.
Yeah,
show.
There was a Hanna-Barbera, and the guy who voiced Scooby-Doo did provide the for Godzilla. And I actually have a lot of
bro, Rokio.
I have a lot of fondness for that cartoon. It's kind of charming and it's horrible.
I'm just imagining his roar being arr, arr, which I can't do right now because my voice is fucked. But
Godzuki was the little sidekick.
He was the scrappy dude.
Yeah, he really was.
He was the scrappy kaiju. Now so, I know how to ruin Matt Frank.
It is funny how apparently Gareth Edwards. There was recently an article in Empire that had some bits from Gareth where he was talking about how. Yeah, so people kept teasing me about putting Godzuki in the movie, and it got to the point where I was typing Godzuki's name into my phone more than Godzilla. So when I would send emails to, like, the producers and Toho, that Godzuki would be automatically replaced with Godzilla, and he'd have to email back, like, that's not what I'm talking about!
Whoops.
Toho was like...
And that's
Excuse
how he lost
me?
The job. And it went back to Roland Emmerich.
Oh, no. Oh, I did watch that the other night.
Why?
Well,
no, for you especially. Why? Isn't
I
that just like
to,
a non-flashback for you?
I wanted to see how... I wanted to see where I stood emotionally from the film 15, 16 years later.
Yeah.
Is that what we're at?
It's like watching the Hindenburg footage. We just want to know what went wrong. We want to know why this happened so we can avoid it in the future.
There's so many reasons. I'll be honest, I'm actually at the point where I think I'm at a kind of peace. I've achieved a new state of enlightenment with regards to this
film. I admit I own it on Blu-ray, but it's still on the plastic.
Right.
So.
Well,
right, but you realize what you're describing right now is like the process you go through when you have PTSD.
That's like, very apt.
You're like, I've reached a peace with it, where I no longer wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night.
Screaming and clawing at my skull.
Yeah, feeling like someone has stepped on me with a giant lizard foot, and then I was fine for some reason.
Right, and not just riddled with radiation poisoning.
Yeah.
Because and that's one of the things I like about the new movie, is that they're really saying, yeah, don't go in an area where Godzilla's been, because it's just laced with strontium-90.
So is that what they said in the trailer? I missed that part.
Well, that's part of the plot of the film.
It's pretty much, you know, once Godzilla has taken a place out, it's out.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's
yeah,
there's
out.
There's no reconstruction. It's not like not like Halliburton secretly planned for Godzilla to come to this town.
And what's amazing is this is shit they got right back in the 50s. I mean, just, but
But, you know, regardless, I felt like I'm at the point where I can kind of take a step back from the 98 film, because they hardly even call him Godzilla in the movie. And it's more of a remake of The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, which is the old Harryhausen joint.
I love that movie.
That's a great movie. Yeah. Great old-fashioned monster movie. But with this new movie, they're just hitting all the right notes. Everything that's coming out, I'm just like, you're getting it, you're getting it, you're getting it.
Well, now, they are, of course, doing Godzilla as the original Godzilla, which is he's flat out a terrifying monster and nobody's friend.
Right.
He's not going to be teaming up with, like, two little Asian girls who sang and saving the city from another really weird monster.
A group of really, like, cast out orphans in Japan who sing a little song about how they belong to the monster. That was the thing that always bugged me about Gamera.
Oh.
We belong to Gamera. Like, wait, you belong to, what is it, a cult? Are you offering up human sacrifices to him?
Well, he is the friend of all children in more ways than one.
It's terrifying.
They like turtles.
They like turtles.
Like turtles. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the new movie is just, I think that they're really good. They got it right. What I do like is that one of the things they mentioned is that Andy Serkis was involved in the development of the new Godzilla.
Oh.
And that they actually did do some motion capture for his face. Which is, it makes me think, like, now, what are they going to do with that? Is he going
to
be...
I can't wait to hear Godzilla scream no.
Yeah. No!
No!
You don't expect Godzilla to be mugging for the camera.
Well, you clearly, my friend, were not privy to the 70s.
Wait, did he do a lot of mugging in the 70s?
When he's got a there actually are production stills out there of him having a telephone tower in his mouth chewing on it like a Mifune film like he's in a samurai western. There's, and he's even got like a tree like he's ripped out of the ground holding it at his side like
a samurai sword.
That's funny.
Yes, but the 70s can get away.
So that's going to be very much like this film.
Yes. If the Snickers commercial is any indication. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah.
Oh man.
He just eats the Snickers factory? Is that what happens in it? I don't know.
Oh, no. It's the whole thing where, like, it's an honest-to-God man-in-suit Godzilla. And if you guys listening should go look for this immediately. Because it's a man-in-suit Godzilla. He's hanging out with these guys, and he's on jet skis and on Forerunners and stuff. And everyone's like, Godzilla's pretty cool. Except when he's hungry. And then, give him a Snickers!
Yeah.
My favorite Godzilla is always going to be Bobcat Goldthwait.
that was something that was going around when the trailer hit. People were like, check out the Godzilla trailer. It's a YouTube video of that scene from One Crazy Summer.
Oh man,
I actually took a lot of delight in that. That was really awesome. But yeah, no, I'm stoked for the new Godzilla movie. I can't fucking wait. And not only for the monster, but they're doing this really, you know, innovative and revolutionary thing where they're developing the human element of a monster movie and not just like all those fucking Transformers movies. I could give two shits about the carbon-based life form in those films. Like, no, just show me more robots beating each other up.
It's hard enough to give a shit about the robots in the film.
I got to that point, too. It's like, well, we've already ruined humans, so now we're going to ruin the one good thing about the first Transformers movie. Let's put testicles on this one. Let's make Step and Fetch It racist bots to put in there, too. Fuck you, Michael Bay.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm probably, I mean, I like to think, for a while there, I like to think of the kind of person who's like, oh, well, it's called Transformers, I'll go see it. I won't like it, but I'll go see it. Now I'm at the point where I really don't want to sit in a theater and be angry for 2 hours. And it's like last night, I was actually watching, I thought, you know what, I haven't actually watched these movies in a while, let me just check out some clips, you know, Prime from, you know, Prime fighting Sentinel Prime or Megatron or whatever, and I'm just like, Prime's not a psychopath. He's not like, you die! Like, that's not Optimus Prime.
I don't give a shit. When I saw him cut that other robot's head off and, like, walk away with it, I was like, okay, that's an Optimus Prime I can get behind. And it may not be to the letter of what the cartoon told us he was.
Well, as I understand it, Peter Cullen, like, actually objected doing that. Because that's not the...
Well, luckily it wasn't him doing it. It was a giant CG robot, so you don't have to worry about that.
I just can't get past Leonard Nimoy quoting Searcher Spock in the third one. That really... It really actually upset me.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. I was like, this is... come on, Nimoy. Why did you agree to do that?
There's so many better ways.
I preferred him as Galvatron.
Yeah, just adding insult to injury.
I preferred him singing the theme song to the animated Hobbit. Like, that's Bilbo Baggins.
Richard Whitaker, have you shown up with more gifts for Matt Frank?
I swear to God, if you give him one more goddamn My Little Pony thing that he talks about on my show, I will kill both of you. Both of you. I will seal you in this room at this table like the fucking cask of Amontillado. Stop it. Stop it. Don't do it. Don't you, you all right.
They speak in the secret clopper code.
Chip Zdarsky touched me.
Aww.
It was me. It was lovely.
I was, when he first showed up to the pre-party at Austin Books, I was hanging out with Chris Nicholas, and he came in and wrapped his arms around Chris and gave him a giant kiss on the lips. And Chris,
why?
And Chris just told me before this to make sure to tell everyone that again. So.
Wow. Friendship is magic.
It's so magical. So are you still working on the Godzilla books, then?
Oh, yes, sir.
How is that going?
Well, it would be going great if I could tell you if we were going past issue 12 or not.
Oh.
Like, I'm working on issue 10 right now, issue 11 right now. I've got 4 pages of ink when I get home. Yay! Careful, tunnel. And, not from clopping.
I didn't say a word.
I don't even know what's involved with it. I just have a vague idea of clopping, so let's just
let's not go into it.
I could show you some clips of clopping if you want to know more about it.
No.
No? Okay.
No.
So,
I'm
going to
get out of here if you do that.
I'm doing issue 11 right now. There's going to be a great big fight in it between, like, just a ton of monsters. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then issue 12, is I'll be rolling into issue 12 after that. I got the first draft for issue 12 just the other day. It's really great stuff. We're hoping we can go past 12. We can't say yet whether we will or not. That's not our decision to make. That's IDW's decision. But the book's going well. People are loving it. We've had the most consistent sales of any IDW Godzilla title.
Wow.
Yeah. We haven't had the most sales. That would be Kingdom of Monsters when it first came out a couple of years ago. But ours are the ones that it leveled out, and our numbers aren't fluctuating, really, because people are sticking with it. They really like it. So.
You know, you'd think after a while, I mean, you're talking about multiple runs of Godzilla notes.
Yeah.
There's a point that you think is Tokyo, you go, you know what, let's just build this somewhere else.
We haven't even been back to Tokyo in the books.
Oh, where are you attacking now?
Well, it's all over the place.
Okay,
where are you attacking now?
He's just showing
up. Oh, he means the comics.
Godzilla's North American tour now? What's happening?
Well, let's see, we just destroyed Brisbane.
Okay.
I don't even know where that is.
Yeah,
I
can't. It's in Australia.
Okay, thank you.
Like there's anything to destroy.
oh no, you made the country that gave us the preeminent post-apocalyptic film look like a post-apocalyptic film.
I just wanted to see Godzilla say, I shouldn't have taken that left turn in Albuquerque.
No. Wah, wah, wah.
Is this Pismo Beach?
We are talking about, actually, there is a store in Albuquerque that I've been to once a year since I started working on Godzilla, called Astro Zombies. A little shout out to those guys. And the owner is a huge Godzilla fan. I actually went to his, when I went there for the first time, he showed me his office, and it is just wall-to-wall Godzilla stuff, and mostly Smog Monster stuff. Like, specifically, Smog Monster.
You are all about that Smog Monster.
I'm with him on the Smog Monster.
Smog Monster, old vagina eyes.
Old vagina eyes.
That's the one it was. He has a clint laser.
I remember back in my day. We would go up the house on the hill up a spell and sit and gab about with old vagina eyes. He would spin his yarns. We would drink from the double X. Yeah. We would drink from the jug.
You like it? I wrote a song about it.
Old vagina eyes.
It's the worst Tom Waits song you've ever heard.
Doling out life lessons and touching us inappropriately. Vagina eyes. I am so tired right now.
I can tell.
It's really starting to affect me. I'm sorry.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to actually talk about Smog Monster when it comes out on Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah, they are finally releasing that on Blu-ray.
I can't wait to see this.
Yeah. Oh, man. Smog Monster is... There's some trippy Godzilla movies. This is a whole other level, let me tell you.
And then trying to make a movie with a political undertone about the environment and industrial pollution that really is just a totally weird and fun Godzilla film.
Well, I mean, it's both of those things and so much more. It's a little scary.
And
when you start
so much more.
Jumping into animated sequences.
Yeah.
And, oh boy. But yeah, I'm excited.
Smog monster. Smog monster. Wherever you go, you got vagina eyes. Smog monster.
I think Ryan needs a nap.
I need a scotch and a nap.
He just needs a full night's sleep at some point.
That's what I mean by a nap. Yeah. I need a full night's sleep.
Put you into your sarcophagus.
And just to be clear, by scotch, I mean scotch. If there is no metaphor there.
You know, like 5 years from now, he's going to be totally the Abominable Dr. Vibes. You know.
Oh, yes, my God. I will. And your Matt Frank's strange torment will revolve around horses.
Oh, no.
It will.
Not the acid coming down the tubes.
We made the one exception from his Egyptian motif for you, my friend.
Everything is pink. In your demise, everything is pink. Pink and glittery like a Lisa Frank nightmare.
Going to force feed you the pre-made chicken nugget mixture.
Are you related to Lisa Frank?
Oh, my God.
Is that where this is coming from? I now have a theory. Is that why you like My Little Pony?
So I've got to get out my phone and make the tally of the 17th person to make that joke in my life.
It's not a joke. I want to know because I'm trying to understand, Matt Frank. I'm trying to get to the root of the origin of this fascination with My Little Pony.
It doesn't seem like it would come from a guy whose main thing
is Godzilla, right? That's what I'm like.
It seems like the translation point. Like, I just don't know what it is.
My father used to have horses.
Yeah, my father had horses. You just don't fit the mold of a My Little Pony
fan. The thing is that I just like cartoons. And speaking completely just straight, it's just, you know, it's just, I like cartoons, and it's not that bad of a cartoon. It's really not something that I have, like, 20 horse action figures of.
Or wait, are you saying you do?
No one was accusing you of that, and now awkwardly, I feel like we should.
This whole thing has taken a much darker turn now.
Does that mean you have 19?
He doesn't have 20. He has 30.
I actually did commission a friend of mine to take one of the action figures, and she made an Ultra Pony for me.
Ultraman,
but in the form of a pony.
Thank God.
It's not just a pony with an extra large cock.
I was tortured by fans who sent me pictures of the Doctor Who brony line.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, no, no, no.
And that's
no,
official. That's canon.
That's a real
they
thing.
They feel bigger once you're inside them.
Oh, my God.
There are Twilight Sparkle dolls who have been augmented.
Oh, that's just horrifying.
I'll send you all of the pictures.
No, you won't.
Post them all over your website.
Nope, I'm
It'll
go
be so delightful.
Preemptive cease and desist.
Is Twilight Sparkle somewhere a little joke at the expense of the Twilight series? It seems like it would be.
I wouldn't doubt, because I think when you type in the word Twilight, that she comes up before the actual books do, or you know, Kristen, what's her face? I think the Twilight Sparkle is, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't know what's happening to our culture. I want it to stop.
We had a culture.
Yeah, in a petri dish.
When did that? Yeah. Play
it's
on
escaped
words.
Into the in the world at large now.
It's congealed.
There's just fungus growing out of people's eyes at this point.
It became ambulatory, and it just wandered out of the lab, and now this is the world we live in.
It's the last of one of us.
It is the last of us.
Now it's just opening rib cages that bite off good guys' hands.
See, you turned this into something cool. You see what you just did there? You took My Little Pony, and by complete accident, Matt Frank, you've made it something cool.
Starting to see how his brain works.
I get it. Yeah. I get it, man.
There are fan fictions out there that are, it's a whole subgenre of gore ponies. Of just
gore
like
ponies.
Of just like
My Little
one
Pony
of the characters
horror.
Pulling a saw on the other characters. It's actually not even a cool way though. It's just kind of dark and bleak and upsetting.
Yeah, just Google My Little Pony slash fiction.
No, that's not what that is.
So
that's
let me
not
just reach over
no,
here.
No, I've been fooled by that shit before. Not happening.
I told you he wasn't going to fall for that, Matt.
I will have to send you something you might actually enjoy. It's called Smile. and it's
I don't believe
it's an album by the Beach Boys. End of story.
Anyway.
Oh, Matt Frank, I always like talking to you.
Rub your temples.
No, I'm really not being facetious. Like, I get more entertainment out of the conversational, like, roadmap of whatever it is that
you
we're trying
more
to do.
Entertaining interview.
You
than
do,
Matt
man.
No, I like to think so.
You,
I appreciate that.
You are a really great subject to interview.
You ought to hear me on an upcoming episode of Rage Select.
Yeah.
Oh, are you going to be on Rage Select now?
Yeah, I'm.
Was there a Godzilla game?
Well, we did do a Godzilla game a while back when I did the last shirt for them.
Oh, okay.
We're doing something else that's kind of tangentially related, but I don't know if I can talk about it yet because it's also related to something else that's going on, but keep an eye open on Rage Select, and I'm going to be back on the show pretty soon. But we did play a Godzilla game a few months back. That was a lot of fun.
And the question on everyone's mind, of course, is when are you going to do a shirt for oneofus.net?
Yes.
Well, I don't know. I don't work for free.
Are you sure about that? Like, maybe search your feelings, Matt Frank.
Well, maybe if we finally did the Watch a Movie with Us, Frankenstein Conquers the World.
Will you accept grass or ass as an alternative?
Because Chris has both.
You had me for a second, and then you lost me. We'll talk about it. Seriously. Yay. I actually think it would be a lot of fun.
I agree.
I like your little dude here with his glasses and everything.
He's a monster.
Fun.
How are you not excited about drawing?
I thought we were talking about something else.
Oh, no.
What, that guy?
Oh, yeah. Your little dude with the glasses. Oh, he's a monster.
He's a monster, all right.
He flops around a lot, though. I don't know what the problem is.
Dick jokes.
Waka waka.
Waka waka.
Kaka kaka.
We're here at Stable 2014, our last interview of the day with Chip Zdarsky, the co-creator of Sex Criminals from Image Comics, one of the best comics of the year, according to pretty much everyone from last
except,
year.
Except for me. I think we could do much better.
You're not even satisfied.
Yeah, I'm not satisfied.
You could not reach completion.
No, exactly. Oh, God, this is going to be one of those interviews.
Yes, it will. Yeah, just warning you ahead of time.
I read
yeah.
all your other stuff, so I assumed that's what you wanted.
It's true. I was asking for that, yeah.
It's not your first exploration into the nether realms of human undulation.
Yeah, this is probably the cleanest, nicest one. The one called Sex Criminals, for some reason, is the one that I would hand a kid versus the other stuff.
Well, it's surprisingly non-graphic for a book called, in fact, Sex Criminals, and about people who have a superpower they only reach when they have had an orgasm.
Yeah, I mean, the sex is there for story's sake. So we never just kind of throw sex in to titillate. There's no titillating sex in it, unless right. you really get off on just standard.
If you afterglow is your thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh God, those people just had sex. That's so hot. Like,
I find the cuddling to be the most arousing part. So I appreciate
good.
This.
I'm glad you feel that way.
Oh, I'm being cuddled.
Oh, there.
Well, he did kiss Chris Nicholas on the lips right when he got here. So
that is true. Yeah, that's how you greet each other in Austin. That's what I thought.
Well, yeah. When you're planning on having them killed afterwards.
Yeah. Oh yeah. God, I gotta be more careful when I travel.
The Austin Taco Truck Mafia. Yeah, it's pretty severe down here.
Oh yeah.
So you're on issue 4. Now, everyone's. I was actually just asking right now. I wasn't sure when issue 5 was coming out.
5 is at the printers right now. So I think it's out in 2 weeks then. It's usually a 2-week turnaround from when we send it off to the printer.
Is there a planned ending point?
4. I don't even know what we put in 5. I completely forget. No. Well, we were both. Thrilled, and it was quite unexpected, the success of the book. So when Matt originally kind of talked to me about it, he was like, yeah, this will probably last like 4 issues, and then nobody will buy it, and then we could say we worked together, and that was fun.
It seems like the natural evolution of where Image was going anyway, because they already have a book called Sex, and they already have a book called Criminal, so there you go. It's like a crossover book.
I know. I was thinking of actually making the logo, just those two logos put together.
As if someone had cut them out of a magazine and just put the two fonts next to each other?
Yeah. I made a joke earlier that that we should rename the book Sex Criminal Saga, so we can just like
let's tie it all together.
Yeah, so we can confuse everyone and really jump on every single person's bandwagon.
The walking sex criminal saga.
Oh, yeah. So we didn't realize we'd go past issue 4, but in our talks together, our late night giggling chats, we discussed longer stories and extra characters and even an end point for it all. So we have like a loose plan. But I think every month Matt's just kind of seeing where it takes him and kind of talking me through what he's thinking.
Right.
So, yeah. So the plan right now is we're going to go until people are sick of us.
That's better than most shows do it. Is it doubly satisfying considering that this is such a daring concept that it's succeeding, you know, despite the fact that there's no capes, there's no utility belts, there's none of the sort of quote-unquote mainstream, you know, comic stuff in the book?
Yeah, I mean, mainstream's such a weird kind of word because Image is producing popular genre work. So, which is still all mainstream. Like, the idea that a zombie book would not be considered mainstream is weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Or sci-fi books that they're putting out, or crime books. Like, they're all still tapping into kind of well-known genres, usually with a twist to it. So I consider it a mainstream book. There's no capes yet. Well, I don't know. We'll see
there
what
might
happens.
Be, yeah.
The surprising thing has been the fact that, and probably the thing that feels the best from it, is how many young people are into it and how many women are into it. Like, we get so many letters from women excited about the idea that the main character is a woman and that the experience feels genuine, especially coming from a couple of middle-aged white dudes, you know, which is always the danger.
You just take absolutely. Away reason and accountability.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole Jack
so you write woman
mark.
So well. Yeah. Sorry, I had to quote that. I couldn't help myself. I also heard rumors that your long-time running strip, Prison Funnies, is going to get collected.
Yeah, that's a rumor. I may have started that rumor.
Is that actually a true rumor? Or is that
it's one of those things where Matt suggested we do a Chip Zdarsky omnibus. I think he came up with some sort of funny name, like Chipnibus or something. And he suggested it to Image, and they were like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And I'm like, oh, let me just flip through my old work. Oh, my God. This is so ugly.
I was looking through your stuff. I just was rereading all the old stuff that I used to back on LiveJournal when we were friends on LiveJournal 10 years ago or something. You'd post it, and I'd go like, oh, I love that guy. This stuff's great. I haven't read it all since then. It's like, this stuff is classic. You should totally put that back in.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm proud of it on one level, but on another, it's hard when you're an artist looking back on old work. I know there's a few artists out there that feel the same way. The big problem is just time. Like, even though it sounds easy, like, oh, you're just collecting your old work, it would take me probably 2 or 3 weeks of work to find, clean up the files, reorganize it, put in new material, kind of fix mistakes and stuff, do a new cover.
I can't help but imagine with the success of Sex Criminals, you're not having Image going, so what do you want to do next?
I'd imagine the door is kind of open. I haven't really talked to them too much beyond the idea of like a collection. I have a few ideas that I want to do with other artists, and Image is definitely kind of the first place I would pitch it now, for sure. They're so great to work with. So like, it's unbelievably
easy. Who would have known going from the earliest days of Image when it was all Spawn and Wildcats and stuff that they would end up being one of the big three?
Well, know? That's the thing. I mean, it was big three back then, too. But the material has changed, but the ethos is the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's creators.
Creator.
Like, the way the financials work, the way the editorial system works, like, it all favors the creator. So it seems, I'm surprised it's actually taken this long for so many kind of Marvel DC guys to kind of make that jump to Image. You know, I'm sure there's certain fear, like, as soon as you stop doing, you know, Captain America or Spider-Man, like, will people forget about me? Was I mostly about the character? But, you know, once the writers get past that, and the artists get past that idea, and kind of realize that they're producing quality work, and they could do it on their own, and, you know.
It seems like all the companies seem to be, like, more going towards what works for them that much more strongly. Like, DC has just gone, we're the guys that people want to go to now for the big multi-spread giant fights and lots of, like, more stuff that was going on in the 90s but continuing on. Marvel seems to be pulling into, like, we want to do comic books, but we want to do the side stories of these comic books. What goes on in these guys' normal lives? You know, books like Hawkeye and things like that.
Well, they seem a bit more, they're kind of, Marvel, the spectrum seems to be kind of Image, Marvel, DC. Like, Marvel it gives a bit more of a free rein to creators and tries different stylistic things.
Yeah.
DC, they have a plan. They're a company with a plan, and they're sticking to it. And they have kind of a house style. Like, if you draw a certain way, you write a certain way, and you're flexible enough, then you can get into DC. And then Image is, like, the far end of it, where, like, you can do whatever you want.
Doesn't Image have... Image has a first look deal, too, right? With a film company?
No, that's the thing. Image has...
They've not signed one of those yet?
No, then they never will. Like, that's the thing.
Image, I guess they don't need to.
Yeah, I mean, Image doesn't handle media rights at all. They don't take a cut of it. They take 0% of any kind of media rights.
Right just through the creator.
0% of ownership.
Wow.
The only thing Image takes is they... when you publish with them, there's a flat fee to cover their office costs, and it's the same for every person on every book. And then the rest of the money is split between the creators beyond the printing. With trade paperbacks, they take a percentage of sales on those, and that's, I think, where they really kind of make their money. And they're able to pay their staff well and, you know, kind of keep going. But that's it. Like, there's no media, there's no movie deals, TV deals. Like, if Matt and I wanted to do a sex criminal Saturday morning cartoon, that's up to us.
Please, for the love of God, do that. I want to see that so bad.
It doesn't have to be Saturday morning, but a cartoon, for sure.
Sex Criminals and Friends.
Yes, yeah, please do that. Sex Criminal Babies.
Of all your work, the one that seems to me that would translate to that would be Monster Cops. Monster Cops is one of my favorite things you've ever done, with Dracula, the Wolfman, and Frankenstein get talked into by the commissioner of police. Look, you guys are just hurting inside. I want you to know that I trust you, and I think that it's time for you to do some good. So they become cops in the
city.
Yeah,
I understand you.
Do good. And it's so clever and funny. And I watched it, and I was thinking, man, if Axe Cop can get made into a television series, Monster Cop seems like a no-brainer.
I know. Every time some new monster thing is like announced, I'm just like, oh, God, this is so close. It's funny because I did Monster Cops because I was doing Prison Funnies at the time and I had nothing to give kids, and our studio was doing an anthology, and I was like writing stuff for kids is easy. You just pick one thing, you pick another thing, you put it together, like monsters and cops. And as soon as I said it, I'm like, oh, maybe that's what I'll do. And so I did it. And it's funny you mentioned, like, you know, the idea of like movie TV deals, because that was the first year I went to San Diego. And I remember, like, so many people came by the table just with, like, I'm with a film production company. I'm with, like, Scott Bakula's film production company, and we're looking for new things for Universal. I'm like, okay, sure, here's a copy. You never hear back. And,
yeah, don't sleep with the first girl at the party. Yeah.
Especially if that girl is Scott Bakula.
Yeah, exactly.
I have always said that.
Yeah, that is true.
When did anybody try to sell something by saying, oh, and Scott Bakula?
Yeah. Yeah, like, well, what?
Didn't even work for Star Trek.
No, it worked in the opposite direction for Star Trek.
So is there anything else on the horizon other than working with sex criminals you can talk about?
Sleep. I want to get. Yeah. There's nothing kind of official. You know, I did a cover for Midas Flesh, Ryan North's book, with Boom, and that's coming out for Emerald City Comic Con, so I'll be signing for that. I'm actually just kind of putting together pitches right now with other artists, because there's no way I can draw another book.
Yeah.
It takes 7 weeks to kind of get an issue of Sex Criminals out. But I feel like I can squeeze a script in here or there. So I've got a couple of people I'm talking to about some kind of big fantasy sci-fi fun genre ideas. And I'll pitch it to Image, and they'll be like, oh, who are you again? Are you the guy that Matt picked to work on that sex book?
That's the thing, is like your writing has always been just as entertaining as your artwork. I've always thought, like, I'd buy a piece easily just because you wrote it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I've always kind of worried, just because I don't have kind of previous big publisher writing experience. You know, I spent years working for a newspaper writing joke stuff for them. That's kind of the bulk of my material. So I'm always worried that if I put a book out, people will be like, what? I'm not going to pick up something written by the artist of a book I like. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, you could do the covers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'll be doing the design and covers. Yeah.
So I'm now Chip's agent.
No. Yeah. All right. 10%. Right.
My first piece of advice is get a new agent.
The first thing you're going to do is Monster Cops versus Sex Criminals.
Yeah. Get a new agent.
Can you get me a meeting with Scott Bakula?
Definitely.
All right.
In fact, he's actually here. He's standing right behind the curtain. He's been waiting for this.
Yeah. Anytime you mention his name three times, he shows up like Beetlejuice. So.
I think that's a thing. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Chip. We really appreciate you sticking around.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I know you've had one hell of a day.
Oh, it's been nuts.
I mean, you've got carpal tunnel, like, automatically after
I'm gonna
convention.
Yeah, when I go on the plane ride home and they offer a drink, I'm just gonna be like, just ice, and rub it on my arm and my nipples.
Can you just pour it in my mouth? I can't really hold the glass at this point.
Yeah, I just need it on my arm to cool it off.
Check out his book, Sex Criminals, coming out from Image, issue 5 on the way. The critics were not wrong. One of the best books of 2013, and, you know, hoping you don't screw it up for 2014.
Yeah, you never know.